How difficult is it to be in the hospitality sector at the moment? Plus,
children have been swearing or spitting or throwing furniture in a classroom space as well.
Some primary school teachers are striking over claims that pupils have bitten staff and brought knives into the classroom. How have we reached this stage? And
please don't be tempted to go out, but stay at home and hunker down. These are dangerous gusts of wind, and as I say, very unusual indeed, in the extremes of this part of the world.
The very latest on Storm Gretti, with a danger to life warning in force.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the government's expected to announce extra support for pubs in the next few days, after landlords warned they wouldn't be able to survive April's rise in business rates. The Tories say help should be extended to other small firms too, and they want a reduction in VAT for the hospitality sector. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark says Rachel Reeves had no other choice but to U-turn.
The Chancellor clearly is very worried, and she said that she is listening. I'm told that a specific pubs package is expected as soon as next week. What's happening next week? Of course, the finance bill is back in the House of Commons. Those crucial votes on the budget and exactly what that will mean for the future of the Prime Minister, for the future of the Chancellor, will become very clear.
The most severe red weather warning for wind is in place for large parts of Cornwall as Storm Gretti hits. It started at 4 p.m. and gusts of 99 miles per hour have already been recorded. 40,000 homes so far in Cornwall are without power tonight. Ollie Heptinstall has more for LBC.
The Met Office say flying debris could bring a danger to life, with the red warning in place until 11 o'clock tonight. It covers most of the duchy, including capital Truro, Penzance, Newquay and Falmouth, as well as the Isles of Scilly, with forecasters warning the exceptionally strong northwesterly winds are expected to damage buildings and homes.
Well, the storm's also bringing heavy snow to parts of Wales, parts of South Yorkshire in the Midlands. Birmingham Airport suspended all flights because of the heavy snow. Protests and vigils have been taking place after an anti-immigration officer shot dead a woman in the US city of Minneapolis. Officials claim Renee Good was fired on as she tried to ram her car into federal agents, but witnesses have challenged that account. An ex-Premier League referee has been spared jail after a sexual video of a teenager was found on his laptop. David Coote's been handed a suspended sentence. And it's finished goalless between Premier League leaders Arsenal and defending champions Liverpool in their clash in North London. A win for the hosts would have taken them 8 points clear at the top of the table. In the city, the FTSE 100s closed down 3 points at 10,044. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather. Storm Gretti will slowly edge away tomorrow, but rain and some snow continuing across the east of England. Sunny spells and a scattering of wintry showers elsewhere. A high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
3 minutes past 10 is the time. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Reilly in for Ben Kentish on LBC. Coming up,
more than 40,000 homes without power in Cornwall. With the latest on Storm Gretti, I'm LBC's Andy Ballantyne.
And I'm LBC's Midlands reporter George Ike, as Birmingham Airport's been forced to close their runway because of heavy snowfall.
The latest from around the country as Storm Gretti batters parts of the UK with a danger to life red warning in some places. We'll tell you where. Also,
schools are not in a position to tackle all of the issues that are leading to this escalation of bad behaviour in schools.
Teachers have been striking at two Greater Manchester primary schools over a culture of violence. What is to be done about behaviour at schools? We'll discuss later on.
Guys, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to be able to check you in.
What?
Full truth and transparency of the building, obviously. I know that you're from the street and we don't have hotels and nothing like that. Not a personal thing.
We're not going to be able to check you in. We'll speak with a charity who booked two rooms for the homeless staying in Manchester with temperatures of minus 6 degrees. They were denied the right to stay because they said they don't allow homeless people there. They've subsequently apologised. We'll speak with that charity. And
one of the most difficult things about losing weight is keeping it off, no matter how you lose it, really.
whether you lose it from a diet or whether you go on shakes or whether you go on these extreme diets or whether you take, you know, any of these GLP-1s.
Now the boss of Greg's says weight loss drugs have affected their business as researchers suggest weight loss jab users may need to continue taking them for life to stop them putting on the weight. Oh, and we'll talk with Ben Kentish later on in the show.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Father Kentish, as we're calling him now, he has given birth, well, I say he's given birth, his wife has given birth to a lovely boy, and we'll hear a little bit more from Ben later on about that moment, and hear the very latest from the Kentish household. That's still to come. We're going to start this hour by talking about the U-turn on business rates, or a poised U-turn. We don't necessarily know this is the case, but often this happens with government announcements. Rather than tell the people who are affected, i.e. pub landlords, they start briefing journalists, start briefing various people to stick it in newspapers, stick it on the radio. And we hear today there will be a U-turn. That is certainly what allies of the Chancellor are saying. To Keir Starmer, we hear, has been working in lockstep along with the Treasury to come to the aid of publicans, having already made adjustments for farmers. Yes, you'll recall that U-turn on inheritance tax. I mean, at this stage, whatever the government say, you might as well assume the opposite. This is quite extraordinary. We've had a U-turn on changes to the benefits scheme because of pressure from Labour MPs. There was then a campaign after the winter fuel payment cuts, and they basically U-turned on most of that, on getting rid of the winter fuel payment for many people. They've U-turned when it comes to farmers, and U-turned on the changes to inheritance tax policy, and now they've U-turned when it comes to business rate relief on pubs. Now, Rachel Reeves and Labour MPs have seen themselves banned from some pubs. You've been hearing from landlords here on LBC and in other places who are furious with the government and the Labour Party for their approach. We expect the government to U-turn over forthcoming business rate increases for pubs after a backlash from the industry. First reported by LBC's political editor Natasha Clark, the Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer spoke with LBC earlier.
In relation to pubs, the business rates obviously went down during COVID. They've been re-evaluated. The overall rates are lower. That's the government's action. But the re-evaluation means that for some pubs, I recognise it's a challenge for them because that's put their bills up. That's why we've put in place temporary relief to soften that. What we're now doing is talking to the sector, talking to pubs about what more we can do, what further support we can put in. And that's an ongoing discussion. I'm pleased to be having that discussion with them. And I hope that we can go further and put in further support because they're obviously vital to our communities.
I hope of further support, a bit of a lifeline, hopefully, for publicans. One very famous publican is Tom Kerridge, the Michelin star chef and TV presenter who runs various pubs and restaurants. He, for the second time this week, spoke with my colleague Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Although we still don't know yet what it is that they're proposing, the fact that it's making news that there is a proposed U-turn in some way, we welcome that. But that is also a little bit, that's not support. That's like saying a few months ago, we announced the budget, which meant like, we know there's an industry that's in trouble. Here's the budget. We're actually going to punch you in the face. Now, a few weeks later, we're saying, actually, no, we won't punch you in the face, but we still know you're in trouble. Whilst we fully welcome the business rates reduction and the understanding of understanding the issue the industry is on, it is the VAT push that we are looking for as an industry. So, yeah, it means that they've not made it any worse than it is, but that doesn't make it any better.
And ever since, though, that news, that suspected news to come in the few days, weeks that follow of a U-turn from the government, we have heard from a minister. The Employment Minister, Dame Diana Johnson, spoke with my colleague Andrew Marr and said it wasn't a U-turn, but that the government were always listening.
The Chancellor announced the change to business rates, which I think was a good announcement in terms of making it fairer for smaller businesses. But alongside that, we had the fact that the previous re-evaluation around business rates had happened during COVID, and we know that profits were down then, and that had an effect on the re-evaluation. And the other point is, of course, that some of the help and support that was put in around COVID, that's coming to an end. So I think her policy was right, and money was made available to try and smooth the way for the other two factors that I've identified.
So what went wrong? I mean, something went wrong.
But what's happened now is that the pub sector have come forward with more information to make their case to ministers. And I think it's right that ministers listen. If a pub landlord or a trade organisation comes forward and says, we understand what your policy wants to do, but this is actually something you need to be aware of. I think that's right. So, we look at it.
Dame Diana Johnson, that is as close as government ministers get, by the way, to basically confirming there will be a U-turn. And what of the opposition? Again, LBC very much leading the charge on this. You need to stay tuned to LBC to hear the very latest on what the government are thinking. Kemi Badenoch, the Conservative leader, said that the U-turn was entirely foreseeable.
Labour MPs went away for Christmas and were banned from every single pub in the country. They've come back realising how much people hate them and are demanding a U-turn. I don't even know if this is or isn't going to happen, but it was completely foreseeable. What did I say at the budget? That Rachel Rees was hurting businesses. Our policy is to scrap business rates for the high street if it's under £110,000. So that's pubs, restaurants, shops. That's what we really need.
Kemi Badenoch speaking with LBC's Tom Swarbrick earlier on. What of William Lees-Jones, who's board member at the British Beer and Pub Association? He's also CEO of JW Lees, a brewery in Manchester, with over 100 pubs. And William joins me now. William, thank you very much for joining us. We'll get into the politics of this in a little while. Can I ask you firstly, for those who aren't in the trade, what are the big changes that you and your sector are concerned about?
I think the big changes are that the government with business rates promised a complete review, and the system that we have is archaic. And so business rates raise about £25 billion a year for the government. And there have been some changes, but the biggest problem we have is that the Chancellor stood up and said she was going to support pubs. You've got the valuation agency, you've got HM Revenue and Customs, you've got the Treasury. But the budget was 6 weeks ago, and so people have been worrying about this. The changes come into place in April, and you've literally got publicans thinking, yeah, do we just throw the keys back? Do we shut the pub? Because the increasing costs that we've seen from the previous budget with the minimum wage, with the changes in employers' national insurance, that the costs just keep going up and up and up, and you get to a point where you think, actually, business needs to work with government through trade associations, and there's almost been a breakdown of trust with these U-turns and the sort of smoke and mirrors, because it really is tough. And I think the difficulty is that we can all see that from a business rates perspective, that the high street is being overtaken by the internet, and if we're going to have high streets that are vibrant, then pubs are an integral part of those high streets.
Well, just to put it in layman's terms then, so my understanding is, as you say, the pandemic discount on business rates was 75%. Rachel Rees then reduced that to 40%, and from April, as you say, that discount will go completely.
The discount goes. There's then transitionary relief in place.
Right.
Then you have some smaller pubs that historically have never paid business rates. And so what we've seen is the government saying, how are we going to raise this amount of money through business rates? And it seems, I don't have all the specific numbers, but I read in the papers that say a big Amazon warehouse business rates have gone up 6%,
yeah.
Whereas most pubs have gone up by 30%, and some of them have gone up by double. But it gets worse because local authorities, who are obviously stretched because they haven't got huge resources, they're still dealing with appeals from 2023, from 3 years ago. And then when we get to April, where the new rates come in, and that's the only time that you can start appealing it, you have this uncertainty. If you've got uncertainty, people won't invest. And in fact, in some ways, if you invest, then your business rates are going to go up, which means that your business is going to become less viable. And so we end up with this political problem that the government was elected on a basis of creating growth. Growth comes from creating more jobs, having less unemployment. And hospitality can really turn that on for the government. But at the moment, it just feels like we don't have great communication and great support from the government.
What else needs to be done to support your industry? Because as you say, pubs are very much an integral part of our culture, really, of British culture and of local communities, hubs of local communities. So the last thing anyone wants, I would imagine, even those at the top of government, who I'm sure many in your profession have sort of banned from from pubs and whatnot, but they want pubs to succeed. What needs to be done in order to have a pub sector that is not surviving but thriving?
There's lots of different solutions that different parts of the trade are proposing. And, you know, it seems really mean when people say, well, 18, 19-year-olds shouldn't be paid the same hourly rate as perhaps more experienced people. But at the same time, by equalising those rates of pay, which was a manifesto promise from the government, you're actually going to increase unemployment amongst younger people, which we can see is higher. But some people are saying, you know, bring down VAT. We have very high VAT. We're also seeing that there might become a holiday tax for people holidaying in the UK. Well, you know, we know that it's sunnier in Spain and other parts of the world. We're sort of trying to tax the industry almost out of existence, which feels very wrong.
If I could put a message from a listener, because it is something that you hear a lot, and I know of the various cost pressures that in your sector you have, but I mean, Jack in Bristol says, why is beer so expensive in pubs? If it was cheaper, there'd be a lot more people going there. I imagine that slightly infuriates you. Why does the price of a pint have to be what it is?
Well, basically, if you're going to a pub to have a pint, that pint from a supermarket will cost you, say, £1, and the pint in the pub will cost you £5. What are you paying for? You're paying for the staffing of the pub, so the costs of that are going up. You're paying for the business rates. You're paying for the heating of the pub. You're paying for the fact that you are going into somewhere that purely makes its income from selling those pints and those pies and those products across the bar. And so we have seen 2/3 of the beer in the UK is now bought in the off-trade rather than the on-trade. And we're basically going to be chasing people back into their homes. And one of the things that we saw during lockdown was, as a nation, duty went up about 15%. We drank 15% more alcohol at home, but people were not drinking in a supervised environment. And so there's something I think that we're slowly all rediscovering, whether it's going back into the office or whether it's going to the pub. People are better when they're with other people rather than just getting angry at home and getting on their keyboards and getting onto social media. You know, we need to interact. And it's one of those things that is pretty unique about the pub.
Lastly, can I ask you about what we've seen with some landlords banning Labour MPs? I mean, have you done that? And what are your thoughts on that?
I actually had beer with my MP Jim McMahon in Oldham the week before the budget, and
it just reminds people he's no longer a minister, I understand. Or
Jim's no longer a minister. He's the former
employment minister, I think.
Council.
Yes, fine. Yeah.
But yeah, we were talking about, you know, stuff, and he said, you know, you're not going to like the budget. I don't think anybody's expecting us to like the budget, but I'd like to believe that whilst there are MPs being banned from pubs up and down the country, that we can have a meaningful dialogue. And, hey, you know, at the moment, it looks like we're going to have some sort of U-turn, some sort of support for pubs. And if the Prime Minister can persuade the Chancellor and the Treasury that that's a good thing, then that's great. But it would have been much, much better to have known that 6 weeks ago when we had the budget, rather than having all this chaos over the last 6 weeks.
Well, I don't know what time last orders is, but do let us know if Keir Starmer or Rachel Reeves poke their head in tonight. Thank you very much for your time. That's William Lees-Jones, who is board member at the British Beer and Pub Association, CEO of JW Lees, a brewery in Manchester with over 100 pubs, about 138 to be precise. After your views now, UK Hospitality say that actually it's all great concentrating on pubs and they need the help, but actually it's hospitality more generally that needs this help when it comes to business rate relief. So I'm keen to know from you this hour, if you do work in hospitality, quite how dire is it at the moment? Is it as bad as you hear made out in the press, as people are making out? If you run or work in a pub, I would really like to hear from you this hour. 0345 6060973. And for the hospitality sector more generally, how tough is it when it comes to these new business rate rises due to come in? And what of the U-turn as well, even if you're not in that sector, from a government? Yet another one. Does it chip away at your confidence? We'll come to your calls next.
This is LBC.
Hello, this is Mummy phone. We're on holiday with an amazing beach. She's asked me to record her voicemail because she said if anyone hears the way I pronounce Menorca, they'll agree how important it is that we spend time together, undisturbed.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail, but a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna. Like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 10 is the time. Good evening, Henry Reilly with you here on LBC. By the way, this is not a new problem. We've known that pubs are closing down for some time. Actually, in terms of COVID, there was a huge relief for them. I know there are various pressures and they'll say, well, they've still been struggling, but 75% business rate discount in a lot of cases. And that's great, but we have been sort of, I think we've taken our eye off the ball a little bit and we've been meandering into a situation where pubs have been closing at such a massive rate. Pubs closing on a weekly basis, and we see the stats and we go, isn't that terrible? And yet no one is really willing to put their head above the parapet and to say, well, up with this we will not put. And you hear now some pub landlords saying they're going to embark on some form of industrial action and go out on strike, and you can't really blame them. I mean, what else are they supposed to do? It's a real tough situation for those who work in the pub trade. And let me tell you this, if the pubs close down in this country, it will be a national embarrassment and it will be a time of national shame, because there is nothing better than in a local community having that hub where you know it will always be warm, it will always be sort of dry, as in out of the cold and out of the wet. You'll always be greeted, in some cases, most cases, with a friendly face. Yes, there's an issue when it comes to pint prices, although I'm pretty sure breweries and pubs would like to lower it. But we cannot get into a situation where we just stand by and go, oh, isn't it terrible? Well, in a market economy, you let pubs shut down if not enough people are going in. Pubs are full. You walk past, I mean, not only in central London, where I often am, obviously, after the show, but in parts of Essex where I visit, or even I was up in Shrewsbury about a month ago, all of the pubs there completely, they're almost teeming with people. And it's not an issue with footfall at pubs. It's really not. If that was the case, I'm sure at some pubs it is, but if that was the case, then you go, well, unfortunately, there isn't the demand for it. You can't force people to go into pubs and pay this money. There are people going into pubs and paying that price. And yet somehow still it is not a viable business. And you do, why? It's almost a pretty selfless thing to be a landlord of a small independent pub, because you know you're not going to make a ton of money. You know that in a lot of cases, your taxes are only going to go one way and that's up. Yes, you do it for the camaraderie, I imagine. You do it for, it's pretty cool, to be honest, to say you are a landlord of a pub. But what is the incentive to do it? And so if we're going to do one thing this year, can we please support local pubs, I would argue. And that doesn't mean I'm telling you to go out and get roaring you-know-what on a Friday night. Just go in and support your pub when you can. You don't need to go in every day, but, you know, support it. Because it's one of those cases of you will miss it when it's gone, your local pub. You will miss having that hub of the community. And if we don't do anything about it and we just stand by and we don't have people like Tom Kerridge, Tom Swarbrick, to be fair as well, in the media making a big song and dance, a big hoo-ha about it, then we are just going to meander into a position and sort of blindly go there where we don't have pubs. And that's a situation where we really don't want to be in. And by the way, it's not just pubs. It's also hotels. It's also coffee shops. If you work in the hospitality sector, if you're in pubs, you need to pick up the phone and tell me tonight how difficult the situation is. If you don't have this intervention, then what was the situation for you? How bad would it have got with your business, your pub? Maybe you own more than one pub. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you just work in a pub. And also, when it comes to the coffee shops and the hotels, if you work there, make a case for your industry. How tough is it for you at the moment? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Phil's in High Wycombe. Hello, Phil.
How you doing?
What would you like to say? Sorry, I've calmed down a bit now.
No, you're all right. Sorry, yeah. I've got a bit of a chest infection, so I apologise.
Oh, my goodness, you haven't got that horrible thing going around, have you?
Yeah, I've had it a while. Don't worry about it. It is what it is, you know. Okay. To be honest with you, I mean, I think that I just go to Witherspoons and my local club. I'm not prepared to pay £5, £6, £7 a pint. I think it's an absolute rip-off. I feel sorry for the landlord, of course I do. But I'm afraid it's getting to a point where it's just getting too much. People need... If they're going to do something with
the
business...
Is it really £6, £7 a pint?
It depends where you go, you know. Right. It's like anything, but your average is sort of for £5 at least. But yeah. I won't pay it. I'm not prepared to pay it.
How much are you paying at Wetherspoon? I mean, by the way, I've got nothing against Wetherspoon. I like Wetherspoons. I'm there quite often. But it's what, a couple of quid cheaper?
Yeah, oh, more than that. I mean, I go on a Monday club. It's £1.50 a pint of Worthingtons. And you can get it for under £2 during the week. It's a good drink as well.
You're commission, you know? Here, Phil. But I do take your point. And look, obviously, there's the food culture of pubs as well. But you will miss it, the other pubs, when they're gone, Phil. I'm sure of it.
Well, I won't miss them because I don't go in them because I just refuse to pay the money. And I'm not tight by any means, but I just think people are getting ripped off. I mean, when you go on a Saturday night, there's certain places around here, they're charging £7, £8, £9 a pint, you know. Well, I won't name them, but, you know, they whack the price up because they've got bands coming in. And yet, fair enough, they're full. And good luck to them. If people want to get a bank loan out to go and have a drink, good luck to them. But I'm afraid, you know, I hope that...
But to be fair, they don't want them to be that price, do they?
Well, they don't want it to be that price, but I mean, I'm sorry, but I mean, I ain't prepared to pay it. And the thing is, I mean, all right, I hope that the Chancellor can sort something out, you know, for the landlords, I really do. But the consumer's got to feel it in their pocket, you know. It's all right, it's all, we're doing this stuff, and we're going to knock a penny off a pint. That's not going to get people going back to the pubs. They need to knock it down by 2 or 3 quid, and then people will drink more and go back and enjoy it more. That's not going to happen, but that's what should happen.
Wetherspoons is an interesting example because they've got the formula right there, and Sir Tim Martin, the boss there, is I mean, he comes on LBC, speaks to Nick Ferrari quite frequently,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
And whatever the formula is there, he's got right. I mean, I quite like it. There's no, even though I love my football and I love sport and I like music, it's quite nice to go in. They all have a situation where it's just the hubbub of the pub. Isn't it? There's no music, there's no sport.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. And I went to see my brother at Christmas and a friend of mine, and all he did was get cans and went, he's got a bar in his garden. Oh. And a few of us got round, and we just got a load of tinnies. Yeah, we got a load of tinnies, and just, you know, I know that they slag the supermarkets off, but that's where things are going to go. If they keep putting the prices up, like they are doing, people, it's just not sustainable. People can't afford it. My mate doesn't go out.
That's more on the government, though, Phil, isn't it? That's more on the government to act.
Yeah, well, this is what they should be doing. But yeah. I mean, I bet they won't put it down enough that people are going to say, oh, great, we're going to go out drinking again. Because if you're paying £6, £7 a pint, you think about it. You go out for a night out, you got your missus, you know, and all the rest of it. You go out for a few beers. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mm. It's not sustainable. I mean, well, I went round to my mate's house, as I said, and my brother's, and we just got a load of cans from the supermarket. And we had a laugh with a few friends, and it was just as good.
Well, that obviously sounds good as well. But the only thing I would say is I understand why landlords are frustrated. A, they don't want the prices to be that high. And secondly, people are more than happy to go out and blow a load of money on dinner, for example. And that is extremely expensive. And
I agree.
Well, I mean, I suppose you've got your spoons as well. You can do two in one there.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll go for Carvery. You know, they'll tell me Carvery's, they're good as well. Do you hear what I mean?
I know, I know Toby Garvey's. Yeah, it's one not far from my parents. Thank you very much, Phil. Nice to hear from you. Phil there in High Wycombe. Over to you as well. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Am I going mad here when I'm sort of, and Tom Swarbrick has led the charge on this. He's been the sort of pioneer when it comes to trying to save the pub. But am I going mad in thinking this should be a massive priority for the government? There are obviously loads of different things going on, to simplify it. But this has been by successive governments where we just sort of accept that, oh, one pub a week closes. And look, as a reporter at LBC, I'm often sent to various different locations. That's actually the best part of the job, really, places I haven't been before. And when it's an overnight stay, naturally, I go and check out the local pub just to check everything's all right and that the beer's still working. And that's the best part of it. And you get to go into a new place, new decor, sort of speak with people there. It's where you get your frankest view, really, and you get the lay of the land with what's going on when it comes to pubs. And I'm not just saying that as a reporter, by the way. That's when you move into a local area. That's where you meet, you can make friends if you move into a local community. The last thing we want at a time where there's real loneliness, particularly among men, but loneliness more generally, people describe it as an epidemic in this country. The last thing we want is for a place where everyone is welcome at a pub to come in and you don't have to have a drink. You can have a Coke, or you can have a non-alcoholic beer, or you can have a glass of wine, whatever you want. And you feel welcome, you don't feel judged. We really can't lose that. So if you work in the sector, hospitality generally, but specifically if you work in a pub, a hotel or a coffee shop, how difficult is it for you at the moment? And with this U-turn, again, I don't know your balance sheets, but is it enough? What more do you need to see done? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Also,
more than 40,000 homes without power in Cornwall. With the latest on Storm Goretti, I'm LBC's Andy Ballantyne.
And I'm LBC's Midlands reporter George Ike, as Birmingham Airport's been forced to close their runway because of heavy snowfall.
Latest from Andy and George in a moment. Storm Goretti, 99 mile an hour winds in parts of the UK. We'll bring you the very latest. 10:30 the time. The news is with Daryl Jackson.
The government's considering a U-turn on business rate rises for the pub sector outlined in the budget, with an announcement expected next week. The Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch welcomed it, but told us she wants to see a reduction in VAT for the sector as well. 99-mile-per-hour gusts have been recorded as Storm Goretti brings what the Met Office is calling dangerous winds to the UK. At least 40,000 homes without power in Cornwall and Birmingham Airport suspended flights. And Arsenal missed the chance to move 8 points clear at the top of the Premier League. They were held to a goalless draw by defending champions Liverpool. LBC weather, Storm Goretti will slowly edge away tomorrow, but rain and some snow continuing across the east of England. Sunny spells and a scattering of wintry showers elsewhere, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC, coming up on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Coming up tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at breakfast, as Storm Goretti hits the UK. Nick will have reports from the worst affected areas. Plus, former Top Gear presenter turned pub owner James May is live on the show to react to the government's U-turn on business rates. And the former Defence Secretary, Sir Gavin Williamson, responds to that Russian threat that any Western troops in Ukraine will become legitimate targets. All of that and more coming up with Nick Ferrari at breakfast tomorrow morning from 7 on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on
prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on. What about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:33 is the time. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Riley in for Ben Kentish on LBC. By the way, I mentioned earlier on, we're going to be chatting with Ben Kentish a little bit later. We've had to record it because he's got dad duties. He's very busy changing nappies and all of that. But Ben Kentish has given birth to a little boy. And so we're going to be catching up with Ben Kentish later on as I'm squatting in his slots. And I'm here with you next week as well. But we'll hear from Ben about his lovely Christmas, where he's welcomed someone into the world, someone new into the world. We're talking, though, this hour about pubs. Bit of a gear change now. We're talking this hour about pubs. And I want to know from you how difficult it is at the moment if you do work in that sector. So if you are a landlord, if you run a coffee shop, if you run a hotel or work in a hotel, those are the sort of three worst affected, it would seem, of the hospitality businesses. Quite how difficult is it at the moment? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Are you starting to assume the opposite now when the government announce something? They announce, you know, business rates, a U-turn. Winter fuel allowance, a U-turn. Changes to the welfare bill, U-turn. Inheritance tax for farmers, U-turns. I mean, the list goes on. It's almost best to assume the opposite, isn't it? What of those U-turns? Are you in favour of, is it John Maynard Keynes who said, when the facts change, I change my mind? Which would seem sensible. Or after a point, does it start looking like the government is slightly rudderless? We'll come to your views on that in a moment. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. And I am interested, by the way, that previous caller from High Wycombe, Phil, who was saying about not sort of wanting to go in your local pubs. Have you noticed that's you as well? If you don't venture down to your local, why? What exactly is the reason? We'll come back to your views on that in a moment. The number is 0345 6060973. First, though, talking Storm Goretti, winds of 99 miles an hour in terms of wind gusts, and there has been a rare red danger to life warning put in force. We'll be speaking with George Ike, LBC's Midlands reporter, and the MP for St Ives in a moment. First, though, Andy Ballantyne is LBC's reporter in Totnes and can bring us the very latest. Good evening, Andy.
Good evening, Henry. Yeah, power cuts have already affected thousands of homes in Cornwall and on the Isles of Scilly. There's 95 reported blackouts, and that number just keeps on going up and up, changing every second. Wow, I've just done it a refresh. National Grid now reports 112 incidents in Cornwall alone, leaving nearly 54,000 properties with no power, of which nearly 15,000 are priority service customers. It's a record also for St Mary's Airport on the Isles of Scilly, with a gust of 99 miles per hour being officially recorded, but unconfirmed reports of 101 mile per hour gusts at Land's End. The first named storm of 2026 has been described as a multi-hazard event, predicted to be more powerful than the Great Storm of 1987. The storm is an example of a weather bomb. One minute it's raining, hammering sideways, the next it's hail, rattling the windows, and then suddenly nothing like we've got at the moment, or even snowflakes. Due to the double weather warning, red for wind and yellow for rain, a government alert was sent to around half a million mobile phones in Cornwall. The message effectively told people not to travel and stay indoors. The main worry out there at the moment is flood water, especially in the dark where you don't know how deep it is or how strong the current might be. The advice is not to drive through it. Train services across the whole of Cornwall were stopped at 6 this evening. About an hour ago, all traffic was stopped from crossing the Tamar Bridge between Saltash and Plymouth. That's extremely rare. People have also been urged to stay away from the coast. Huge waves have been seen anywhere from 8 to 12 feet to nearly 4 metres high. Well, for now here in Devon and Cornwall, it's really a case of batten down the hatches. We'll see what it's like now in the Midlands, his LBC reporter, George Ike.
Thanks, Andy. Well, Henry, this snow's been forecast for the last few days, and you join me as the feel-like temperature is at minus 12 right now, with various predictions over how much snow would fall in the Midlands. Some estimates were predicting as much as 22 centimetres in some parts. In Old Money, that's more than 8 inches in total, and for younger individuals like myself, the best part of a shatterproof ruler from maths class. Birmingham Airport's issued a statement this evening saying they've had to close their runway because of the heavy snowfall. They say they've had to do it because of the safety of passengers and their crew at the site. It means that all outgoing and incoming flights have been suspended until further notice, and they're asking all passengers to check with their airline before they head to the site to check the latest on their planned trips. And I have to say at this point, Henry, I am in fact one of those passengers due to catch a flight tomorrow afternoon to Dublin. As to whether that plane will take off just yet, well, the jury is still out on that. Warwickshire Police have also issued an update asking people to be mindful of the current road conditions, suggesting if people don't need to make essential trips, they really should think twice about venturing out onto the road network, because the first dumping of snow, particularly in areas like Rugby, is turning to slush ahead of a secondary snowfall at around 2 a.m. whilst in Birmingham, we've heard that some people have had to leave their vehicles on main routes, including the Hagley Road, because of impassable conditions due to the snow. We've also seen incredibly heavy snowfall in parts of Leicestershire, including in Market Bosworth. In some footage sent to LBC by Saxon Sawbridge, snow's been falling there for the last couple of hours, and there's now a heavy covering in that part of the East Midlands, with more forecast until around 9 or 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Earlier today, I was speaking with the ground team at East Midlands Airport, and not only as a passenger terminal, but a huge freight base for UPS, FedEx, DHL and Royal Mail. They are currently working around the clock using an anti-icing solution on the runway to make sure those crucial flights carrying goods into the region and mainland England continue to be able to move. But obviously, as more snow continues to fall, and I just had a pretty big faceful of it here, the goalposts in that situation are constantly moving. In the wider East Midlands, Nottingham's tram service is currently facing huge problems because of the snowfall, with some significant delays across the network. Whilst Nottingham Forest are due to be playing away tomorrow night at Wrexham, that's the first time they've done that since 1993, and they've been issuing guidance to fans ahead of that lengthy trip to allow plenty of time to travel to the game safely ahead of the 7:30 kickoff. But really, any plans for tomorrow, Henry, right now, I'd say it's very much all still to play for.
Well, I hope you've got a Guinness in your hand this time tomorrow in Dublin, George. I hope you make it there all right. Thank you very much. George Ike is LBC's reporter in the Midlands. Before that, you heard from Andy Ballantyne, LBC's reporter in Totnes. Let's bring into the conversation Andrew George, who is the Liberal Democrat MP for St Ives. Can I ask you for your advice to constituents, Mr George?
Well, the advice very firmly is to stay indoors, stay safe, stay away from the coast. I mean, across the whole of the, although it's called St Ives, it's the West Cornwall and Isles of Scilly constituency. There's a lot of coastline and a lot of it is very exposed. And obviously, as we jut out into the Atlantic, you know, West Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly is a very resilient place because we receive these storms from the prevailing, you know, winds, very often, obviously. This is a particularly significant storm, but, you know, we've experienced many before now. But yeah, certainly strong advice, stay indoors. There's no need to go out. A lot of power has been lost. A lot of trees are down, a lot of impact, on the local community.
And what has been, if we drill down into that then, have you seen quite a few homes then in your particular patch that are now without power?
Well, I have to admit that I was trying very hard to get down from Westminster into the constituency for a meeting this evening, but all trains were cancelled, and so I've had to retreat back to London. So actually I'm speaking to you from the remote vestiges of the capital city, I'm afraid, right, rather than in the.
So you can't even get down. You can't even get down to your own constituency.
No, I can't. No. I can't get there. It's impossible. The one plane that goes down that's been cancelled. So I tried to see whether that was an option for me, but that wasn't available. Every single train was cancelled from lunchtime today because the forecast was that they wouldn't make it through. So I've had to retreat back to London, and I'm going to try again first thing tomorrow morning.
And what's been the situation with schools as well? Have many schools shut in your particular area?
Yeah, most of them were sent home today, and then of course there's been a lot of power outages as well. I mean, the meeting, for example, that I was due to go down to, they retreated to an online meeting, and in the end had to cancel that earlier because so many of those who were trying to attend online had no power or had no internet, that virtually no one could actually get into the event itself. So, you know, even those who retreat into us to kind of do their work online, it's not easy.
And if you look particularly at the Isles of Scilly, I've been hearing people on the radio and in other places who, I mean, a lot of the time the school, for instance, is on a completely different island. And so they simply haven't been able to get there. And there have been sort of temporary classrooms erected in various buildings in order to make by. But even those have had to shut early.
That's right. I mean, certainly three of the off islands still retain their junior school. So you have five inhabited islands there, and three of the off islands still do that. So the off island schools still function, but of course, as secondary schools, there is only one secondary school on St Mary's, and that will present quite significant difficulties for those on the off islands. So, cause although they board on the main island, St Mary's, during the week, there will have been a fear that they might not have been able to get back to their parental home on the off island. So many of them may well have departed St Mary's yesterday in order to avoid a situation where they couldn't get back.
Well, I hope you get there at some point tomorrow.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sure I will. It's frustrating, but My biggest concern at the moment is for those people living down there, who are you know struggling while the storm goes on. Certainly, many across the whole of West Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly have been very significantly affected by the power outages, and I'm told that there's been a very significant number of arterial roads have been cut off through lots of trees coming down as well. So there's very significant damage. I'll get down there. Everyone will dust themselves off, go out blinking out into the morning. Hopefully the storm will have passed by then and we can look at the damage and try and work out how we're going to repair the place.
Andrew George is the Liberal Democrat MP for St Ives. We're talking about pubs this hour, but if you have been affected by Storm Gretty, do let me know, particularly if you're in one of those areas we were talking earlier on with in Birmingham, for example, where George was, but in particular St Ives, that area, the MP we were talking to there. If you're on the Isles of Scilly, actually. You don't call it the Scilly Isles, the Isles of Scilly. Do tell me how it's impacted your life. I read about schools being closed and all kinds of issues. Whatever part of the country you're in, how has Storm Gretty impacted you? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Back to pubs in a moment, plus the front pages of the newspapers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The US immigration agent fatally shooting a 37-year-old woman in Minneapolis, which has sparked the most extraordinary war of words as local officials reject the Trump administration's account, using language such as a domestic terrorist. Is he in Northampton?
Why is it so easy to shoot people? And we just watch it. Oh, look, she's been shot. This is not the way to go.
Luke's in Westminster.
What's important here is not the intent of the suspect. What's important here is the perception of the danger on the end of the officer.
Charles in Bagshot.
These ICE agents look like thugs and they act like thugs.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers! Potters! Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Bye, Mum!
He didn't used to leave his room. Now we can't get him back in.
The kids keep me busy, but at least the dentist is sorted.
When this lot need help, there's always an expert waiting.
Family mental health support.
Dental appointments.
All the kids covered for the price of one. That's why I'm with Bupa. Search Bupa Health Insurance to find out more. Only pay for the eldest child up to 20 years old. New Bupa by You customers only. Pre-existing conditions not covered. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the biggest Furniture Village sale of the year. Save even more on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. But hurry. Early Bird offers end this Sunday at Furniture Village. A world-class family business.
This is LBC with Henry Reilly.
And a very good evening to you. 10:49 is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Front pages of the newspapers in a moment. First day, James has been hanging on the line. He's a new caller in Enfield. Hi, James.
Hi, Henry. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Thanks for waiting. What did you want to say?
So you had the caller on a while ago now from High Wycombe saying that pubs should just charge less and
yes.
Why are they so overpriced? I work within the industry supply side and they're not really overpriced. The price they have to pay to buy in product at the level they do as a small independent trader, they can't compete with the likes of Wetherspoons or going to your supermarket and buying a can for a pound. It's down to the economy of scale. So Wetherspoons and the likes of Tesco's and Asda could buy at such high volume that they almost dictate the price.
Right.
To the brand owners, whereas your independent pubs are buying from a third party in a lot of instances. And even if they're buying direct, they're not buying at the same level that the likes of Wetherspoons can, where they can secure favourable pricing. So the pricing they're working with now, although people say £6 is expensive, they're not making a huge amount of money on it. And then when you kind of factor in the energy crisis we had recently, the prices have not gone back to where they were. So just to keep the lights on and to keep the pub nice and cosy for you to enjoy your pints in the evening in the winter, it's expensive. I just feel like people need to give the publicans a bit more slack. It's not as easy as they
seem. Where does that high cost come from then? You're in the process, as you say, you're sort of before it gets to the pub. At what point are people paying a lot of money?
I think it's almost like a snowball effect, right? So production costs have gone up.
Yeah.
That could be just down to the supply of the ingredients to produce the beer, down to the energy cost to actually go through the production process. And then you've got, obviously, then the logistics side of the business. So there's so many different steps from the creation of that beer to then getting it to those independent entree pubs. So the costs add up. And then you've got the publican themselves, where they've got to pay staffing costs, energy costs. What was the other one? Sorry, business rates.
VAT is another issue. Yeah. There's all sorts of issues.
There's so many costs involved that although it seems like they're charging a lot for the beer, they're not really making that much money on it. The time where running a pub kind of put you in the land of milk and honey is long past. I've been in the industry for 8 years and it's changed a lot. Just in the 8 years, and I'm considered a newcomer to the trade. Be a little bit more forgiving in your opinions of the publicans and how they're running their business. It's not as easy as just saying knock 2-3 quid off. They could do that, but they'll probably be gone within a few weeks.
Do you go into your local? I mean, obviously, you're in the how the sausages are made per se. But do you go into your local pubs?
Yeah. So I actually, when I say I work supply side, I have like 60 customers in London that I visit on a regular basis. So I'm hearing.
What do you do? Do you mind me asking what you do?
I'm an account manager.
Okay, got it.
For wholesale, wholesale provider.
Yeah.
I won't say who, but
yeah.
They're having a hard time, and right. I just couldn't hear someone kind of trashing the work they're trying to do unfairly. So that's why I called in.
Mm. Well, thank you. It's nice to hear from the sort of inside situation. James, thank you very much. James, there is a new caller in Enfield. 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. If you are in the pub industry, I'm very keen to hear what it's like, and particularly hospitality as well. UK Hospitality, the trade body, warning that these business rate changes will have a massive impact. Maybe you're just you've just had last orders at the pub, or you had your coffee shop open earlier on, or you run a hotel. I really want to hear what it's like on the front line, as it were. What is it like trying to run or work in a business that's facing these significant challenges at the moment? 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. Also, we have these issues with regards Storm Gretty. Thanks to Richard, who says, this is my truck right now in Birmingham, and sent, oh, you drive a big old lorry. He sent me a picture of his lorry coated in snow. If the weather has affected you, then do let me know. If you're one of these poor people who's had your power cut, obviously you'd have to be listening to LBC, not plugged in. You'd have to have it on sort of rely on good connection. But I would very much like to hear from you this hour. Let me quickly take you through the front pages of the newspapers. The Daily Telegraph talks and has on the front page the story with which we are talking about this hour. Reeves to climb down on pub tax. Chancellor plans to ease business rates and cut red tape. After, they say, Telegraph campaign, I think Tom Swarbrick really has sort of spearheaded drawing awareness to this. And they also cover that Britain shuts down ahead of snow bomb. The Daily Mail, pubs U-turn too little too late. Labour is gearing up for another humiliating U-turn as ministers last night signalled a climb down on tax hikes for pub. Mutinous Labour MPs were told that Rachel Reeves will announce a package of emergency help within days in a bid to head off a brewing revolt. See what they did there? A brewing revolt? No. The Guardian, go back home. Now 34 ex-pupils accuse Nigel Farage of racist behaviour. 34 contemporaries of Mr. Farage have now come forward to claim that they saw him behave in a racist or anti-Semitic manner, raising fresh questions over the reform leader's evolving denials. One of those new allegations is from Jason Meredith, who was 3 years below Mr. Farage at Dulwich College, a private school in South East London. And I can't actually say what the paper alleges that he calls him, but would taunt him with go back home. An allegation, and Mr. Farage did, in a interview the other day, deny the allegations. Not only, he did actually now deny them. The Independent, yet another U-turn. Reeves set to scrap rates rise for pubs. I don't know. How do you feel about yet another U-turn from this government? The Express, same story. Cheers, it's yet another U-turn from PM. Plans to ease huge business rates rise on pubs are too little too late, to claim the Tories. The Sun, send writs like Beckham. Brooklyn goes legal. It's quite good, actually. Brooklyn goes legal in feud with parents. Desist warning to David and Posh. Exclusive by the paper, Brooklyn Beckham sent parents David and Victoria legal notice that they can now only contact him via his lawyers. My goodness, that seems to have deteriorated, that relationship. The iPaper, Putin's shadow fleet in UK waters as ministers pledge to use hard power. The Metro, Wadda Wally, he'll do time. Selfies with stolen cash, showing off nicked watches, how crime gang scored own goal. A team of Albanian burglars who stole watches and cash from rich victims faced years in jail after giving the game away by posing pictures with some of what they had stolen. Oh, very clever. The Financial Times, push to reset EU ties, excludes financial services as city shuns closer alignment. And the Star, cloak and daggers. Traitor. Oh, in fact, I can't tell you that because it's about the traitors, and I've only watched the first episode. So, is it every night, by the way? Because I seem to be so behind. Wednesday to Friday. Oh, right, that's why. I still watched the first one. I thought, right, I've got a few days to relax, and then it was sort of bombarded with episodes. I was thinking, why is it on every night? But Wednesday to Friday, that makes sense. Simon's in Bray. Hello, where's Bray, Simon?
It's just between Maidenhead and Windsor.
Oh, lovely.
We have two. We have two Michelin star restaurants, the Fat Duck and the Waterside.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're lucky you. Have you been in either?
No, it's too much for my blood.
What did you want to say?
I think there's a, because I grew up in a family, my father was in the brewing trade and I grew up in that sort of industry. And I think that a cost that people forget is the satellite television. So my local, he used to have to pay £2,000 a month to have satellite television, obviously because he thinks it would draw in punters to, you know, watch the football. And I think the average is about £1,200. And I did, he told, I don't know if this is true, but he said the bigger pubs might have to pay £30,000 a month.
Whoa.
Just to have satellite television. And he held out for a long time before he got it because the cost, and he didn't think it was going to change. But he was losing trade to other pubs because people like to go and watch the Sky, don't they? They want to watch the thing. But that's just another cost people forget, I think.
Mm. No, absolutely. Yeah. And even music as well. You have to get a PRS license, I think, or you used to. And then that costs an arm and a leg as well if you want to play music.
Just one quickly, so I'm talking for my dad who passed away, but he always used to argue that when he was in the brewing trade, you had landlords and you had pubs that were owned by the brewery and all that sort of thing. Now the pubs aren't interested in selling beer. They own the pubs, they take an amount of money each month, they don't care whether you sell a pint of beer or not. And that's where the industry's changed.
Mm, I think you're right there. Thank you, Simon, appreciate the call. This from Sarah says, amazing unique pub near me in Putney. Oh God, we can't make it too Putney focused. The Cat's Back. I'm sure you know it. I do. I think it's right by Wandsworth Park, isn't it? I'm sure it's really diversified, gone the extra mile to serve the needs of the community. Lots of people talking about their local pub. Mine has a 99p pint of ale. Really? Colin in Surbiton, the government seems hell-bent on trying to take more tax from people. This is obviously not working, so here's a novel idea. Why not ask people to pay less tax, less business rates, less for electricity and gas? And then that is simple, says Colin. And there's one more I wanted to read. This talking about, from Cameron, talking about the snow. Just as I said, Penryn here, wholesome evening, and sent me a picture of, are you cooking something on a stove? Your power's obviously gone out. So sorry for you, Cameron, but I hope it does all recover. We're going to move on. Coming up.
Children have been swearing or spitting or throwing furniture in a classroom space as well.
Some primary school teachers are striking over claims that pupils have bitten staff and brought knives into the classroom. How have we reached that stage? Also,
please don't be tempted to go out. Stay at home and hunker down. These are dangerous gusts of wind, and as I say, very unusual indeed, in the extremes of this part of the world.
We'll continue to bring you the latest with Storm Goretti and
one of the most difficult things about losing weight is keeping it off, whether you lose it from a diet or whether you go on shakes or whether you go on these extreme diets or whether you take, you know, any of these GLP-1s.
The boss of Greggs says there's no doubt weight loss drugs have affected the business. As researchers suggest, on the weight loss, you might need to take them for life.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, more than 100,000 properties across Cornwall, Devon and the South West are without power this evening as Storm Goretti hits the UK. Winds of up to 99 miles per hour have been recorded, with the Met Office issuing a rare red weather warning. LBC's South West correspondent Andy Ballantyne has the latest.
The first named storm of 2026 has been described as a multi-hazard event, predicted to be more powerful than the Great Storm of 1980. One minute it's raining, hammering sideways, the next it's hail, rattling the windows, and then suddenly nothing. The main worry out there at the moment is flood water, especially in the dark where you don't know how deep it is or how strong the current might be. The advice is not to drive through it.
Alerts for heavy snow are in place for the Midlands and parts of Wales. Birmingham Airport has closed its runway. The government's considering a U-turn on business rate rises for the pub sector. In the budget, the Chancellor announced changes to how hospitality is taxed, with venues saying it would see bills soar. Employment Minister Dame Diana Johnson's told LBC it's right that the government is listening.
The pub sector have come forward with more information to make their case to ministers, and I think it's right that ministers listen. If a pub landlord or a trade organisation comes forward and says, we understand what your policy wants to do, but this is actually something you need to be aware of, I think that's right. Yeah. We look at it.
Russia's issued a warning to the so-called coalition of the willing following Ukraine peace talks. The Kremlin says any troops sent to Ukraine in the event of a ceasefire would be a legitimate combat target. The US Senate's voted to advance a resolution that would block military action against Venezuela without congressional authorization. Last weekend, US troops captured the Venezuelan president and brought him to New York to face charges. Arsenal missed the chance to move 8 points clear at the top of the Premier League earlier as they were held to a goalless draw by defending champions Liverpool. The result ended a five-game winning run for Mikel Arteta's side.
We know that the margins are very small. This game then needs some magic moment. And at Anfield, so was they did it and they won the game. And today it didn't happen, but yeah, you cannot win it, you know, then you cannot lose it.
LBC weather, Storm Goretti will slowly edge away tomorrow, but rain and some snow continuing across the east of England. Sunny spells and a scattering of wintry showers elsewhere, high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good evening to you. 3 minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly on LBC. Lovely to have your company. I'm with you here right through until 1 o'clock and also next week as well. You lucky people. You've got me here next week in for Ben Kentish as well, who incidentally, as I mentioned earlier on, we're going to be chatting with Ben Kentish a little bit later. Of course, he of this slot fame, and he's here with you Monday to Friday, Thursday. And we're going to be chatting to Ben because he's had a rather special Christmas. I remember Sheila mentioned, I'm actually listening to, I say it was as if it's a surprise, but I was on LBC quite a lot. So I had Sheila Fogarty on and she said, oh, I can announce that Ben Kentish has, I keep saying given birth. Ben has obviously not given birth. Mrs. Kentish has given birth and has brought a lovely boy into the world. So anyway, we'll be catching up with Ben a little bit later on this hour to find out how he is, basically, and how it's all going. That is still to come. Plus, we'll be taking your latest on the storms, bringing you the latest, but also I want to hear from you. We have meteorologists that we're speaking to, and you heard our reporters earlier on, but if you are affected by the storm, I really want to hear from you directly. Has your power been cut? Have you had to obviously grit? I suppose a lot of people are end up gritting, but are you one of these badly affected areas? Quite how bad is it? As I mentioned on, if you're on the Isles of Scilly, I would like to hear from you about what the situation is. 0345 6060 973, the number to call. This hour, though, after your view, if you, primarily if you're a teacher, if you work in the education sphere, but also if you're a parent, and if you are associated with schools, but also more broadly, if you have been through the school system, which is everyone, because this sort of headline, when I read it, I initially thought it can't be right. We know that there is an issue with some violence at schools and issues with sort of declining behaviour. But this headline, this happens to be in The Guardian, but it's in a range of other newspapers as well. NASUWT, which is the teaching union, one of the three teaching unions, teachers have begun to strike at two Manchester primary schools over a culture of violence. This happened at Ravensfield and Lily Lane schools, who say there has been a 9-day stoppage because of almost daily attacks by pupils. Teachers at the two primary schools said that they've been given to strike because of attacks by pupils that have happened almost daily, leaving parents bewildered by the industrial action. Now, members of this teaching union are taking 9 days of industrial action from this week until the 22nd of January, so at various points, because of what the union called a culture of violence involving an increasing number of assaults by pupils against staff and other children. The general secretary of that union, Matt Rack, said the strike action was a declaration of emergency from teachers at the two schools. Rack said, not only are school and trust leaders failing in their basic duty of care to provide this environment, but they have gone as far as to intimidate and punish staff who report concerns. This cannot continue. The union said the violence was causing pupils to be afraid of attending school. Can you believe that? Some pupils now afraid of attending school and teachers are out on strike. Seems unbelievable. The schools have remained open this week despite the strikes, and some parents who spoke with that newspaper, The Guardian, have expressed surprise at the allegations. Teachers are saying they're not well enough supported. If you work, as I say, in the education sector, if you are a teacher, if you work in a school, if you are a parent of someone who is currently in school, I really want to hear from you this hour. How surprised are you to hear of reports of pupils biting teachers, carrying knives and hitting
support staff and hitting teachers. We know there's been an issue with behaviour for some time, and sort of 'twas ever thus. But really? At a primary school? I'm not justifying it in a secondary school, but when it's people up to the age of 11 in a primary, it seems to me that that is a real cause for concern. And as the union say, a bit of an emergency. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Why has behaviour got so bad at school? Is it because of something to do with society more generally? Is it to do with declining standards? Is it because we're not as strict as we once were? Is it because the parents are useless? Is it because the teachers are not as good as they were? What do you put it down to? And if it's a myriad of factors, what are those factors? 84850 is the number to text, or you can ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. Why has behaviour gotten to a point where we're having teachers strike at primary schools because they're worried to go into the classroom? What is to be done about behaviour at schools? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Let's speak first, before we come to your views, with Chris McGovern, whose campaign for real education, he's the chairman of that particular group and also a former head teacher himself. Chris, do you blame teachers for going out on strike when in some cases they've been bitten and had pupils with knives in their classrooms?
Well, I don't support strikes for teachers. I don't think they should go on strike. Many years ago, at the start of my career, I did go on strike as a teacher, and I regretted it then, and I still regret it today. So I don't think teachers should go on strike. But I do think that the concerns they have, which are very serious, should be addressed by the governors who are running those two schools and their academies. They are self-governing, but they need to be addressed, and teachers do need support from higher authorities, including the government.
I want to move away from the strike aspect of it, and I will do so in a minute, but if I just focus on what you said then, no one goes into the education profession, as you yourself well know, to be bitten, kicked, hit and spat at. If they aren't getting that protection, teachers, then you can't really blame them for saying they don't feel safe in the workplace.
No, absolutely right. I 100% support my colleagues for wanting to do something about this. The problem is, of course, young people aren't coming into the profession because they fear these sorts of consequences. These are primary schools, I think we're talking about in Manchester, but the problem is much more widespread and probably more serious in secondary schools. It's a widespread problem, and it's getting worse day by day, and there is a breakdown of order in some schools, not all. We have other schools which have excellent discipline. Catherine Burble Singh School in Brent in London, which is a shining example of
the
very
Michaela Academy,
school.
Just to remind people. Michaela,
yeah, that's right. It's a shining example of what can be achieved. But look, too many schools are failing to keep discipline, and they're not getting the support from government and indeed from their local authorities.
You talk about the fact these are primary schools, and unfortunately we have heard in the past with regard to secondary schools, but I mean, plainly, the fact that there are young kids in these schools, I mean, primary school age is up to what? It's up to the age of, what is it, 12?
11. Four, yeah,
11. Yeah. I mean, this is unbelievable if the people are bringing in knives at that age and biting. I mean, that is, unfortunately, we've known this has happened in secondary schools, but the fact that it's happening at a younger age, how concerned should we be by that?
Massively, because you know what we're seeing now is a breakdown of order on the streets. That's now spilling over into the classroom. If I can give you an example of the problem with regard to parents, though I'm looking at my own example in a large comprehensive school of 2,000 children where I taught, I remember having a child there, a 14, 15-year-old, teaching him history on a Friday afternoon. And he was interested because he had been to a football match 6 months before, and he had broken a bottle over the opponent's head. It was a Leeds fan, and he broke a bottle over a Coventry City supporter's head, and he was banned from going to football. And on this Friday afternoon, I said to him, what are you going to be doing this weekend? You know, he said, oh, I'm going to the football. I said, well, you're not allowed to. You've been banned from football. And he said, no, it's okay. I'm allowed to go with my dad. So, on the Monday following this, I said to him, how did you get on at the football? Did you get arrested again? He said, no, I didn't. He said, but my dad did.
Oh.
So that, and that was going back a few decades, and there's always been a problem. But in those days, the start of my career, there was corporal punishment, which was, I think, a deterrent. I'm not saying we should bring that back, but there was a deterrent.
No.
No, I'm not saying we should bring that back, but there was a deterrent there. And children did respect their teachers. perhaps in some respects too much so. Perhaps there was an element of fear there. But look, there was a break, there is now a breakdown in order. And the fact is, of course, I'm saying, no, we shouldn't be bringing back corporal punishment, but we're getting corporal punishment in schools every day because people are getting bitten, they're getting beaten up and they're getting attacked. So there's plenty of corporal punishment in schools. It's just not being dispensed by the teachers.
If we do look in school, and I take your point that you think it's a wider issue with order, for example, but if you do look specifically at schools, what policies can work to deter kids from doing this?
Well, you have to have a zero tolerance of bad behaviour, and you have to have parents on side. When I say zero tolerance, so look, you have to have a red line which children know they cross it, they're going to be in deep trouble. And that does include exclusion. And that's hard because when you exclude children, it's pretty damning and devastating for them. But you have to do that to protect the majority. Now, when you exclude a pupil, and I've sat on exclusion panels, it's very difficult, by the way, to get a child excluded. But when you're doing exclude children, they need to be looked after, of course, properly. But you are protecting the majority. And parents need to take on board that if their child can't behave, they will be excluded, put into a unit, which the child won't want to be in, but it should be a helpful unit. You have to get parents on side. Without the parents on side, you can forget it. And the problem today is we have some minority, but a growing number of feckless parents who aren't doing their job as parents. And to some extent, we encourage this because, you know, we talk a lot about taxation and VAT and all these sorts of things. The one way we can help children is to give tax incentives to parents so that maybe mom or dad can stay at home. We worry all the time about who's going to look after the kids. It's always the state. It's always someone else looking after the kids. We need to have parents looking after young children so they get the right habits at a young age. And we can help do that by saying, if you stay at home, you get certain tax relief for your partner and so forth. We've got to help parents to help the children, to help the schools.
In some of these cases, though, where children are biting, I mean, you're not a psychologist, I know, but look, that comes down to a slightly more deep-rooted issue, I would say, doesn't it? Rather than just a sort of poor behaviour. There's something clearly wrong there if that's they have some sort of condition that hasn't been treated correctly, or you just put it down to being bad behaviour.
We over-diagnose to some extent, and look, children are watching stuff on their smartphones, and it includes violence, and it includes biting, it includes games where they bite each other. Children have always bitten each other, by the way. Nothing totally new in that. But I think probably these days, I just think parenting is so important, and teachers feel themselves that they are helpless. It's very difficult. I mean, I taught for 35 years. I can say I didn't really have discipline problems, but I was pretty strict. And that doesn't mean to say kids were afraid of me. They weren't. On the contrary. But they knew there was a line. We have to be very clear with young children and with their parents that they do not cross the line. They're not stupid, these kids. You say to this child, if you step out of line, you're going to not be in the school anymore. Most kids understand that. And if they don't understand it, they have to go. Now, you can't start philosophizing and being too psychological about this. We have to have some pretty clear rules. And yes, those kids who are biters or whatever, they have to be helped, but not by damaging other children. They have to be helped off the premises. Maybe they can be brought back into school. But we have to protect the majority. Look, around the world, they don't have so many of these problems, particularly in the, you know, we look at the Asia Pacific, and sometimes we're a bit condescending about the Asia Pacific, Japan and China and South Korea and Singapore. It's also disciplined over there. Yeah, but those kids are learning. And they're way ahead of our kids by the age of 15. We know that from international tests. Our kids are falling behind. I've spoken to kids in the London, actually on BBC television, and they filmed this. And I was saying to these young kids, you know, the kids around the world are doing better than you because they're working harder. They're doing homework. And these kids in England, in London, they were very, very, very concerned about that. They told me they wanted to do homework. Originally, the debate we were on about was, should they do homework? At the end of the debate, they all wanted to do homework because they didn't want to be falling behind the kids in Asia. Now, around the world, kids are doing better, and they're well, and generally speaking, they're well behaved. We can't let our kids just go ragged and let them off the leash, and let them destroy the education for the majority. Most kids are absolutely fine. Most parents are absolutely fine. We've got to deal with that small minority, because once a small minority get control, in any school, someone's in charge. It helps if it's the head teacher.
Okay, thank you. Chris McGovern is chairman of the Campaign for Real Education and a former head teacher himself. I want to know from you this hour, as I say, I'm not going to keep sort of labouring the point, but this discussion works best if you're listening to this and you are, obviously you might be having a bit of a late night, given if you're at school tomorrow, maybe it's cancelled because of the snow. But if you do work in an education setting, what exactly do we put this spike, maybe you don't think it is a spike, but these incidents of bad behaviour, what do we put it down to? Because bad behaviour's always been there. And yes, we don't want to go back to corporal blooming punishments at all, by the way. I'm not even entertaining that idea. But when you have a situation where teachers are being bitten, I mean, it's unbelievable. And what needs to be done, do you think? I'm really keen to know your thoughts. If you work in the education field, you know better than I. What are those challenges? If you're listening to this now, pick up the phone and tell us. And then more broadly as well, because this affects all of us, this is the next generation, those people who are in primary schools at the moment. What do you put it down to that there is such an issue, it would seem, and it's not just confined to these two schools in Manchester, the union making the point this is across the country. What do we put it down to, that there is seemingly such an issue with behaviour in schools? 0345 6060 973.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes past 11. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Reilly in for Ben Kentish on LBC. I'm with you here until 1 and next week. How exciting is that? We're talking this hour about schools, and it's been some time since I was at school. When did I do? 2015. So 11 years since I was last in school. It's not that long ago, but that's when I left sixth form. 11 years ago. And why has behaviour seemingly got so bad since then? I do remember at one school I was at, I did two secondary schools, but there was someone who threw a chair at a teacher, and that was a huge deal. We had a school assembly and it was like, whoa, this is the worst thing that's happened here. That can never happen again. And that was obviously interesting. But this seems to happen across the country and to varying extents. So I'm keen to know what you put it down to. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Let's go first to Toby, who's in Alfreton. Hello, Toby. Where are you?
From Alfreton, Derbyshire.
Ah, I know it. Go on.
Fantastic. So I work for Unison, which is the largest trade union for support staff in the UK.
Yes.
And just wanted to get the point of support staff. So support staff often get, you know, not necessarily recognised, I understand the teachers are on strike in this school, but often it's actually the support staff that take on the biggest brunt of this violence in schools. You know, they are often one-to-one, you know, teaching assistants that are working directly with SEN kids with lots of behavioural needs, lots of really difficult, complex challenges, and as a result, they often do become more violent. And I think part of the problem in schools is support staff. When I've been into schools, I'm going to a school tomorrow, provided it's open because of the snow.
Well, yeah.
But support staff, you know, in the schools I've been visiting are saying that they're undervalued and, you know, they don't feel respected as part of that. And part of that is that...
And is that in terms of pay, or is that in terms of their how they're referred? I mean, why do they feel undervalued?
Well, I mean, it's a broader thing, isn't it? It's pay. They don't feel a lack of value from the parents anymore. They feel that, you know, 15 years ago, however many years ago, working in education was a really, really respectful job. Mm. It was very highly recognised, and they don't feel that anymore. But there's also an expectation that support staff, and I'm sure teachers have the same, are expected to basically put up and shut up because these are kids, and it's, oh, well, you know, these are kids, it's okay. You've got to, you know, you've got to accept it. They don't know what they're doing. Now, I didn't long leave education. I left education only 2 years ago. And, you know, I found the, you know, the state of some of the kids' behaviours appalling. And there are lots of kids who do find that appalling. But I think there is definitely a herd mentality that, you know, it seems cool nowadays. And there's a lack of consistent punishment. Yeah, to
terrorise teachers, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, I can't comment 15 years ago because, you know, I was only in primary school. but, you know, I have seen over my years that respect of teachers and sports staff has massively declined. Mm. And that, you know, that the punishment hasn't been consistent. You know, sometimes it will be a child will get excluded. But other times it'll be, you know, just a slap on the wrist because it's become so normalised in schools.
I do think punishment works, I have to say, in terms of detention. I remember the big thing that was sort of levied and almost threatened was a Saturday detention, and that was the worst of the worst, because you think, well, the last place you want to be on a Saturday is school. And I think in some cases that did work. Now, I'm not saying it's only solved by punishment. I'm aware that in some cases you've got to work with these kids. I mean, you know, there's a bit of carrot and stick. But I do think in terms of you can't let people get away with it. You've got to call it out every time it happens.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I remember people in the school I went to would, like, lose lunch breaks, and that was seen as really bad because, you know, that's when you go out, you play football, you hang around with your mates, and you were losing that.
And you don't get street cred from your mates by missing lunch, do you? I mean, right, that eliminates that.
Yeah, and then you do lose, you know, lose that connection with your friends. But I feel often that's not put out. I think also parents don't often comply. Mm. So, I mean, the previous week, I can't remember his name now.
Chris McGovern.
Chris McGovern was talking about, you know, parents. I feel like there is that, especially because parents don't always apply and work with the school. Parents think, oh, well, it's not my kid's fault, and maybe won't send them to detention, or will say, oh, well, it's fine if they don't attend. And then what does the school do after that? If the parent's not working with them, if the child isn't going to the detention, where do you go after that?
Mm. And what do you think?
I mean, I don't think it's a silver bullet.
Mm.
You know, Unison has been doing a lot of work for years now on violence in schools. And it's really tricky, especially when education is in the state it's in.
What do you hear from the support staff as well? If you obviously, you, as you say, Unison do a lot of work with support staff and represent huge numbers of them. What are the other concerns that you hear from them?
I mean, there's lots of concerns. There's a rise of intimate care, and I think that's down to parents, again, feeling distant, not necessarily distant from their kids, but not necessarily raising their kids as well as they have done in the past in certain circumstances. And that teaching systems are more and more expected to be teachers in classrooms. Also, massive understaffing. You know, if you've got two teaching assistants in a classroom, it's easier to deal with a difficult child because there's a teaching assistant to handle that. But we're finding more and more that classes are going understaffed and there is purely just one teacher. If you've got a disrupted child and a teacher trying to teach, well, the teacher's been taken away from the teaching to deal with a disruptive child, or they try and pursue with the teaching and the disruptive child is disrupting everybody.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a massive under-resourcement and understaffing in schools, as well as
a lack of cohesive strategy on SEN.
Yeah, and I think, well, when we've been talking a lot about SEN in the last, well, I say for the last few months, but obviously it's going on for years, the issues with funding and whatnot, but it really does seem to have become a real topic of conversation, in particular over the last few months. Toby, thank you. Karen says smaller classes equals smaller audience, which I think is a good point on the subjects of people acting up for the sake of their classmates. And Jason says, as the parent of two girls, one SEND child, I think schools have become too woke and no discipline. The teachers are bad and just interested in having meetings about meetings, and they have no action. Some kids get away with literally murder. It's just their, it's the culture of the school, and the teachers have no backbone, says Jason in Plymouth. Stephen's in Blantyre in Scotland.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, Henry.
How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
You've been hit by the snow?
No, unfortunately not. I'm a bit of a skier. We don't have much snow up here.
Oh, right. You're a bit of a skier, did you say?
Yes.
Oh, right. Oh, well, apologies. Well, hopefully you've got some snow coming, although it's quite serious in other parts of the country. What did you want to say about school, Stephen?
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, I've got no problem believing that pupils bite teachers, threaten them with knives, etc. My cousin used to be a primary teacher, and biting the teachers was all too common in her school. I know the school that my kids went to, they've left school now, so I can't verify from them, but I've heard reports that occasionally a pupil will pull a knife on a teacher. And I've got to ask, why aren't the police getting called in for these incidents? Are they? Maybe a teacher who's listening to the show could come in and tell us. I think that's true.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't... I think I would assume, and I don't know, by the way, the issue is that teachers don't want to call the police on their students because, A, they don't want to jeopardise the life chances of that child, and they want to sort of work with them and think that they can be the intervention, and B, maybe there's an element into thinking it looks bad on them. I don't know.
Oh, but this is a knife getting pulled. You know, for
well,
Pete's sake,
yeah,
surely,
well, sorry, with a,
surely
a with
teacher
a knife.
Should be allowed to...
Yeah, with a knife.
To the police.
Call. Yeah, of course. With a knife. I was talking more about the biting, which is still very unpleasant.
Yeah.
You're right. With a knife, that is very much a police matter, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why do you put it down to anything else? What do you think is causing this? Why do you think we're hearing teachers having to go out on strike?
I just wonder if it's alcohol and drugs. You know,
but it's primary. This is primary school.
You know?
But these are primary school kids.
No, maybe not so much in primary school, but the knife threat, and I think, comes from secondary school pupils. And I could believe that alcohol and drugs would be behind that.
Mate, I don't know, really. I remember at one of my old secondary schools, we had a knife arch that we used to have to go through some days, and that seemed to, although I would always get pulled up for my little compass, you know, the little point you got on your compass. That was about as rebellious as I got at school. Stephen, thank you, in Blantyre in Scotland. More calls in a moment, 0345 6060973. Why has behaviour deteriorated at schools, do you think? What do you put it down to? The number again, 0345 6060973. By the way, if you have been impacted by Storm Greti, then do let us know and tell us the situation. If you're one of these poor people who has seen their power cut as well, very much would like to hear from you. We'll come to your views on that in a moment. Also...
Guys, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to be able to choke you in.
Why?
Full truth and transparency of the building, obviously. I know that you're from the street and we don't have the hotel. It's not like that. Not a personal thing.
We'll speak with a charity who booked two rooms for the homeless staying in Manchester. There were temperatures of -6 degrees. They were booked and paid for, these rooms, but the two homeless gentlemen were denied the right to stay. The hotel has subsequently apologised. Why? Well, we'll speak with that charity who booked the rooms in the first place next. 11:31 is the time. The news is with Daryl Jackson.
More than 100,000 properties across Cornwall, Devon and the South West are without power as Storm Goretti hits the UK. Alerts for heavy snow are in place for parts of Wales and the Midlands. Birmingham Airport's closed its runway. The government's considering a U-turn on business rate rises for the pub sector, with an announcement expected within days. In the budget, the Chancellor outlined changes to how hospitality is taxed, with venues saying it would see bills soar. And David Bowie's former childhood home is to be opened to the public. The singer lived in Bromley in southeast London for 12 years until the age of 20. LBC weather, Storm Goretti will slowly edge away tomorrow, but rain and some snow continuing across the east of England. Sunny spells and a scattering of wintry showers elsewhere, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge
at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Ben Kentish is coming up later on this hour. My interview with Ben Kent, who's the host of this slot normally, I'm merely keeping the seat warm for him this week and next week, but we'll be chatting to Ben about fatherhood because his wife has given birth. There's Matt leaving, bye-bye. Ben's wife has given birth, and we're going to be hearing all about it a little bit later on. This lovely message, oh, not again, just turned on, can't believe it's you, Henry. Do you ever sleep? You seem to have had a shift every day since late last year. What's going on and where's Ben? We'll be talking to Ben. He's on paternity leave, and rightly so, and we'll be hearing from Ben in a moment. We're talking about schools primarily and why teachers at two primary schools have had to go out on strike. What do you put that down to? Teachers report being bitten, hit, kicked, and had knives pulled out of them at primary schools. That can't just be spoken away as one particular bad example in Manchester. That would seem to me like there is a problem. And what would you put that down to? Why is behaviour seemingly getting worse in schools? 0345 6060 973. We're talking also about Storm Goretti and the 99-mile-an-hour wind gusts to the UK as rare red danger-to-life warnings are in force. Carl says, if they have a power cut, I don't think they'll be listening to you. Well, some are, Kyle. I'm aware it'd be slightly more difficult. Pete is on the line. Ian, I don't know this area. Is it Fowey?
It's actually Foy. Pronounced
Foy,
yes, that's
yes.
Right.
Almost. There we go, Foy. I can tell I don't spend much time down in Cornwall, sir. What's happening in Foy?
It's actually, surprisingly, at the moment, not too bad. It has been pretty rough all evening, but just for the last half an hour, it's kind of calmed down a little bit. It does seem like most of the county are without power, though, so that's not ideal.
How about you with your power?
Ours has been on and off since about 7 o'clock. It came on for a little while, then it's been off. Definitely been off more than it's been on. I think looking at the kind of national grid, it looks like they're thinking power's going to be back on not until tomorrow at some point. So it's not ideal. I guess a lot of people are going to be quite cold tonight as well.
Yeah, quite. And what is it? It's on at the moment, right, or not?
No, so it's off at the moment.
Oh, it's still off, right. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so it kind of comes on for, 2 minutes, then it's back off again. I imagine there's a lot of electrical engineers out working trying to fix it, but there's, I think the last thing I heard was about 45,000 homes without power in Cornwall.
Yeah, which is crazy. Well, what are your plans for the next few days? There's a red warning, isn't there, in various places where you've got to sort of stay inside, danger to life warning.
Yeah, so I think, we had the red warning this evening. I think down here, the red warning was finishing at about midnight, yeah. Which seems about right, because it's definitely a lot calmer now than it was an hour ago. I'm planning to try and get back to work again tomorrow. But obviously down here, we've got a lot of trees and things. It looks like, yeah. And sounds like, from stuff I've seen, there's a lot of trees down across all the roads. So we'll see what happens tomorrow, I think.
Can I ask what you do?
I'm actually a broadcast engineer.
So I work in broadcasting, but I've got about an hour's drive to get to work. Right. So we'll see if I get there tomorrow.
Good. Well, good luck. I hope you get there all right.
We
need broadcast engineers. My job, they're crucial.
Make sure
people like you be. Thank you. And just quickly, any plans? I mean, hopefully you if it's all over, you'll be back to work and living your life as normal, right? If not, you'll have to stay inside and watch The Traitors and listen to LBC.
Well, I think that's it, yeah. That's if power comes back on, of course.
Well, that's true, actually. How are you listening to LBC at the moment? Are you on Global Player?
Yes, just on the phone. So,
right.
Hopefully battery will last. We've got power banks and stuff, so hopefully phone batteries will last, wake us up in the morning, and we'll see when it comes back on.
Thank you very much for calling in. Appreciate it, Pete. If you are in a similar situation to Pete and your power has gone off and you are managing to listen to LBC through the LBC app or Global Player, I would like to hear what the situation is like where you are. I was listening to a lady on the radio earlier on who is on the Isle of Scilly, on the Isles of Scilly, who was saying that she has had to basically get as many flasks as possible, fill them all up with boiling water just in case anything happens. And they've been charging power banks like mad as well, because they just don't know. And very well prepared, I would say. 0345 6060973 if you have been caught up in the snow and your thoughts on education and why behaviour has got so bad. We're talking about a range of different subjects on LBC tonight. So I'm going to quickly press pause on that conversation, though, and talk about another story that I read earlier on, and I thought there must be something that's gone wrong here. Surely they were acting up, the individuals, or surely there was another reason why they were denied entry to a room in which was paid for them. A homeless man was refused entry, homeless men, two of them, were refused entry to a city centre hotel. They were told they couldn't stay at their pre-booked rooms after being identified as homeless on a night where temperatures had plunged to -6 degrees. Despite the rooms being paid for by a charity, Two Brews, the men were told by staff at the Holiday Inn in Manchester that it doesn't allow homeless people to stay in the property. A Holiday Inn spokesperson for Manchester has since apologised, saying the incident was not in keeping with our policy of welcoming all, and we're taking steps internally to strengthen our training. Well, let's speak with that charity who booked the rooms for the two homeless men. Amanda Thompson is co-founder of Two Brews. Do hotels routinely turn away homeless people, Amanda?
No, not as I've known of in the past. I mean, we was doing it on Sunday night as well, putting them into the Travel Lodge and the Gardens Hotel in Piccadilly Gardens, and it was absolutely fine, even to the extent of them taking the dogs with them and putting them in the hotels. So we've not heard of it before.
Could you just explain, then, what has happened in this situation? You have booked, through the charity, as I mentioned, Two Brews, rooms, and the people have not been allowed to stay in there. Just tell us more. What happened?
Well, we went out, me and a YouTuber, a friend that supports us called Mad Manor, on Sunday night, giving people hotels. And a lady gave a donation and asked if we could go on the streets and scoop them up and take them into hotels. So we said, yeah, sure. So we did it, put them in the Travel Lodge and everything. That was fine. It got to about 1 o'clock in the morning. I had work at 8, so we had to go. And then on Monday night, I said to him, what time should we go out tonight? Because his money left. And he said, you stay, do the booking online. While he's out and about doing his walks, he'll pick people up and take them to the hotels, and I'll put them in the nearest hotel to them. So we was doing that again in the Travel Lodges, fine. But then when it come to the two lads in particular, when I went to boot them in, the rooms were full. So the nearest place I could get was the Holiday Inn Express on Oxford Road, because one of the lads had got a bad foot and he can't walk far.
Right.
So we had to get in the nearest one. So he walked there, and as they got there, Mad Manor took them down. And before we even got to the reception area, the security guard came over to him and basically, discriminated by appearance to them and said, what you're doing. So they said, we're here for a booking. Amanda's booked it online with booking.com, and we've got a reservation for two rooms. So we just walked past him, went to the hotel reception, and straight away he was greeted by a look of up and down type thing. So he just carried on to King Yu to say he's got a booking, it's been confirmed. And then the guy just turned around and said, it's not company policy. He knows they're on the streets. And it's not company policy to let anyone who's on the streets to stay in the hotel. discriminating and disgusting.
What do you think this tells you, tells people, about the way homeless people are treated in this country?
They're still looked down upon. They don't become part of the community. People don't look at them like they should. They're just getting more drawn into the pavement. It's like they just walk over them. No one's kind anymore.
It's a really worrying situation because, I mean, this is a very extreme example. I read that temperatures where you are, you know, some cases, -6 degrees.
It was -6 that night when he took him in, and he actually explained that to the person behind the counter. I'm not going to say his position because I don't know if he was a manager or whether he was like a receptionist or
what.
So he explained that. He said to him, he's told him that we've got people in other places, how many we've got in. That it's been paid for. This policy of like the £50 deposit for bakers and German garages, that was being paid for. And what reason did he have except for just that they're on the streets? How can you discriminate by appearance? It's inhumane. You can.
Well, and at the end of the day, it's no one wants people sleeping on the streets full stop, but they have paid for a service, or someone has paid for a service for them. I mean, where does that end? Are we going to stop letting people into cafes? Are we going to stop letting people into pubs? I mean, it seems crazy to me. Could I ask, the Holiday Inn Express in Manchester have since apologised. They've said that the...
Well, I wouldn't call it an apology.
Well, let me. I've just got to tell you what they have to say, just for listeners' benefit. They say it's not in keeping with our policy of welcoming all. After speaking with team members, we recognise this incident is not in keeping with our policy and should have been handled differently, and they're taking steps internally to strengthen our training. I was going to ask you for your response, Amanda, to that response.
So that response to me is just a copy and paste general thing that they send out to people when being questioned on what they do. So obviously something has happened in the past and they've had that ready to just paste out to the people who have like picked them up on it, like yourselves, other news people and other reporters. And you've all had the same reply, and yet in the reply it does not say specifically, we apologise to the two people who we thought was on the streets who are homeless. A sincere apology to them. Nowhere in that does that apologise to the two young lads that we took in who felt discriminated against.
Thank you for your time, Amanda. Amanda Thompson is co-founder of Two Brews, the homeless charity that booked the two rooms. You can call in, text in with your views on that. Also about parents, which we're discussing at the moment, or not necessarily parents, but why teachers have felt the need to go on strike in primary schools because of a culture of violence. Is that something you've heard about? Plus, we'll also catch up with LBC's Ben Kentish next.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
We will be talking about that fatal shooting in Minnesota. How can it be that both sides rush to judgment straight away before waiting for a single bit of evidence? And is more violence exactly what Donald Trump wants?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Every investor has a future in mind. Whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany, the hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website, and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s. I'm going to go take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC. Message Henry Reilly on WhatsApp now. 0345 6060973.
11:47 is the time. Richard's in Chipping Norton. Hello, Richard.
Yeah, hi, good evening.
You're talking about the homeless, based on that call we had a bit earlier on.
Yeah, I run a tourist hostel in central London. And we used to get charities book people in through booking through online travel agents, or they'd phone directly, and they wouldn't stay there from a charity because they know that no tourist hostels are going to accept them either, because the homeless rough sleepers, they usually have other issues. They're usually smelly, or they're drunk, or they take drugs. When you're in a hostel, when you're sharing a room with other people, tourists don't want to have people like that sharing with them.
It's slightly different in a hostel, but at the end of the day, if they're a paying customer, Richard, then why don't they have the right... I mean, if they're doing drugs, for instance, that's illegal, but if they... You would like to think that they can't shower, which is why it's nice for them to stay at the hostel so they can shower. If they have paid like everyone else, then why would you stop them?
Well, if you were staying in a hostel, would you be happy in a bunk bed if the person below you was smelling?
You're right, it's tricky. I know it's tricky. But on paper, is it not a slippery slope?
Yeah, I know, but that's not just my hostel. That would be most other hostels. We also used to
get... But is it different? If we focus on a hotel, though, Richard, you've got your own room there. Why should they...
I imagine a hotel because the mess that they would leave behind.
But you might be characterising...
Bed bugs are a big issue in hotels and hostels.
What are?
I mean, even 5-star hotels have bed bugs.
Yeah, fine. But I wonder if we're generalising here, Richard. You're saying that homeless people have drug problems, drink problems, and are smelly. There'll be plenty who aren't. And these two gentlemen in Manchester, I don't know them, but they, based on the video, they just wanted somewhere to sleep for the night where it's -6. I mean, surely when it's a hotel room, we can get over that for one night.
Yeah, I imagine the hotel probably have their own policies, though, and, you know, the staff aren't allowed to deviate from those policies. Well, we also used to get sometimes Good Samaritans who would book a room for some homeless guy or lady that they found on the street, and they would book a bed in for them. But 99 times out of 100, they wouldn't even turn up, even though it was prepaid accommodation.
Well, that's a shame. I'm confused as to why that's the case. Richard, thank you. Appreciate your expertise on that, running a travel hostel. Let's get back to schools, and Susan's in County Louth in Ireland. Hello, Susan.
Hello, how are you? How are you doing, Henry? I love your show.
How's the weather where you are in Ireland?
It's fine. We're not having any snow, and just very cold and murky and rainy. That's all.
Sounds like the same. It did not stop raining in London today. It was honestly raining non-stop. What did you want to say about pupils, schools?
Well, pupils are nowadays let away with an awful lot of stuff. I'm not talking about children that have special needs or whatever, but I'm talking about children in general, because I can see over here as well, they've no respect for people. They, you know, they go in to shops and that, and they take stuff, and that. Not all kids do that, but, you know, but...
You think it's got worse?
Yes. Mm. When we were at school, we didn't look crooked at the teacher, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying capital punishment should come back, but saying that...
Corporal punishment.
Yeah, corporal punishment.
Yeah, I mean, capital punishment. I mean, yeah, that would be a bit extreme.
Sorry, I misspoke. Corporal punishment, we used to get it, but I just think parents should get tougher. I used to put my young lad's laptop in the room when he was a teenager, and I would let him get it for a week if he was bold, as we call it here, but you used to call it naughty. You know, and I just think it's a disgrace that the poor teachers have to go on strike to nobody'd like to go into work and get, you know, hit.
Well, quite, and that obviously shouldn't be the case. Susan, thank you, and for your kind words as well. Susan there in County Louth. We are going to move on, because as I mentioned earlier on, I spoke earlier to Ben Kentish, who is the LBC presenter of Late Nights with Ben Kentish, of the same name, from 10 p.m. until 1 a.m, Monday to Thursday. He's not here this week. I am keeping the seat warm for him, and I'm also here next week. But I started off by saying to Ben that I'm currently squatting in his spot at the moment and asking how he is.
Oh, really well, Henry, thank you. It's great to hear you, the show's in good hands.
Yes, well, that's...
everybody there.
The listeners don't agree, sadly, but it's...
I'm sure they do. Ben who, they're saying?
Yeah, already. Well, no, trust me, they'll be pleased when you're back. Now, we've been talking about how nice people's Christmases were, and Sheila's already announced this on air to listeners, but you've had the most... I don't know, no sort of adjective's going to do it justice, but the most spectacular, wonderful Christmas. Tell us more.
It is actually been the best Christmas I could have ever imagined. It was stressful. It was difficult. It was a roller coaster. But yeah, on the early hours of the 30th of December, my amazing wife gave birth to a beautiful little son who, I'd love to tell you his name. I can't. Not for any reason other than we haven't actually named him yet, despite the fact he's almost 10 days old, which is a little bit embarrassing. The poor boy needs a name, so that's tomorrow's job. But yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful Christmas period. We had our last kind of Christmas, just me and my wife, knowing that she would be going into labour the following week. She had a very long labour, 31 hours in total, and then had to have a C-section, which was a little bit dramatic and a bit traumatic and stressful. But thank goodness, everything's fine. She's well on the mend, and our little boy is doing fantastically, and he's just adorable. Henry, I mean, I know all parents say this, and I know obviously I'm biased, but my goodness, he is such a sweet little thing.
Well, I hope Mrs. Kentish is resting and that you're running around. And what listeners want to know is, has Ben Kentish changed a nappy yet?
Ben Kentish has changed countless nappies.
Good.
Do you know what? I'm actually quite good at it. The nappies are fine. The feeding's fine. The burping thing is the hard bit. So you've got to, you can see they need to burp, right? And you're sort of rubbing their back and you're moving them around and so on, and they're getting more. That's the bit that I found hardest. The nappies, easy. Easy piece
this
of cake.
This is all alien language to me. On the name, Ben, we need
to look forward to.
Well, who knows? we need to have a think, right? Are we going to name after maybe Nick Ferrari or James O'Brien or Ian Dale? Henry's a lovely name, Ben.
Henry's a good name. Yeah, maybe we should put it out there to listeners. Maybe you should do a poll tonight.
That's a good idea. Referendum.
My wife's sort of going to come in and scream at me in a minute. But maybe we should put it out there to the first baby to be named by an LBC audience.
I think it's a great idea.
I dread to think what the outcome of that.
Yes,
Donald.
Yeah,
Nigel,
good idea, actually. You don't, whether you want your lad called Donald, that's a good idea. How has it been, though? Because you're talking about sort of running around. It must just be... I know to sort of start a family, I could only imagine how sort of special that's been for you, Ben. Because I did notice what you were doing quite a few hours on sort of fatherhood, and I was thinking, there's something going on here. Something is going on with Ben Kentish. You were preparing.
All the advice that I could, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it was wonderful, actually, hearing from so many parents about it. Do you know what, Henry? Like, people prepare you for the kind of difficulty of it. The number of people who said to me that, you know, oh, good luck, it's going to be tough, but don't worry, it does get easier. And obviously, yeah, it's exhausting and it's tiring and you're sleep deprived and you lose track of what day it is or where you are and, or what year it is and so on. But, you know, kind of what slightly surprised me is how much that is just outweighed by just the sheer kind of joy and the privilege of it, really. Yeah, well, yeah, okay, I'm tired. And yes, it's challenging. But that sort of really paled in comparison. And I feel like you kind of, I've almost been a bit taken by surprise at how kind of wonderful those early days are. Because the way it's talked about sometimes, it's almost like something you need to get through. And then once they're a bit older, you know, you can sleep a bit more and they're not crying all the time and so on. But I've actually been sort of really pleasantly surprised. I won't say it's not difficult, but it is. But I think what kind of I maybe stupidly didn't anticipate as much is just the kind you're looking there at this bundle of kind of you know, your own flesh and blood, and just this beautiful, perfect little thing that somehow you or more my wife has created, and the kind of intensity of the joy and the love and the pride that comes with that. Without being too cheesy, that's the thing that's kind of, you know, really, that's the thing that's almost sort of just outweighs anything else. So, yeah, I'm pretty knackered. 3 hours sleep a night is, you know, night after night is not easy, as all the parents out there will know. But it's just been the most, honestly. So it's we're coming up to 10 days, just after you finish your show this morning, Henry. It'll be 10 days old. And it's just been the most phenomenal, amazing, kind of life-affirming 10 days that I can remember, to be quite honest with you.
What have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about Mrs. Kentish through the process?
Oh, that's a great question. Mrs. Kentish has been absolutely phenomenal. Mrs. Kentish was in labour for 30 hours without batting an eyelid.
My goodness.
And about sort of 20 hours in was getting very stressed. Not about herself, but about when the midwife was going to eat her lunch, you know, which is just an indication of sort of, you know, Mrs. Kentish's selflessness. About myself, I don't know. I think it kind of, firstly, Lily, you can function on a lot less sleep than you think. And you don't need to shower or eat quite as much as
don't tell management that. They'll extend your show.
That's 6 hours, yeah. But the thing I think I've sort of learnt most is just how quick, again, it kind of sounds a bit trite, but how quickly your priorities change. And how the things that you used to maybe kind of obsess about or would kind of be, you know, really, really significant, it kind of all pales in comparison a little bit to the sort of desire to just, you know, give this child everything you can and just be the best dad or the best, you know, mum in my wife's case that you can be. So again, I know it's probably a little bit cheesy, but I don't think I've learned anything about myself that I didn't know. Mm. But I think in terms of your outlook on life and what matters and what doesn't, it really, really does put things in perspective, because suddenly there's this, you know, this incredibly vulnerable, sort of totally dependent little thing that needs you. And you have to just kind of on the basic level, do everything you can to keep it alive and keep it warm and safe and comfortable. This little baby, but also just this kind of this fierce desire to just protect and sort of give that child everything that you can. And that really does put, you know, other kind of worries or stresses or challenges or ambitions or whatever it might be into perspective. So I think that's probably the main thing.
Lastly, Ben, I'm holding the fort next week, but what's your message to listeners? You're having an amazing time at home and quality time, but are you excited to get back on the airwaves as well?
I genuinely am. I'm very, very lucky to have a job where obviously it's a very special time to be able to be at home and, you know, very grateful to have the time to, a lot of dads don't, which is something I want to sort of talk about once I'm back on the air. But I'm very privileged to be able to take a bit of time off and be with my child and be with my family. But I'm also very privileged to have a job where I genuinely, you know, thoroughly enjoy and love coming to work and miss when I'm not there. So, Henry, I haven't got to be honest, I've been too busy changing nappies and feeding and all the rest of it to tune in.
Outrageous.
I know you're doing a phenomenal job. I know. I will try, I promise you. But I know you're a star, you're doing a phenomenal job. So I'm looking forward to being back on air, missing everybody at LBC, missing my wonderful listeners, but very relieved to know that the show's in very safe pair of hands until I return.
Thank you, Ben. Ben Kentish, he's back with you, not next week, the week after that. We are going to move on. Thank you very much to Ben. Coming up,
one of the most difficult things about losing weight is keeping it off, whether you lose it from a diet or whether you go on shakes or whether you go on these extreme diets or whether you take, you know, any of these GLP-1s.
Researchers suggest weight loss jab users may need to continue taking them for life to stop them putting on weight, as the boss of Greg says is impacting the business. And
please don't be tempted to go out, stay at home and hunker down. These are dangerous gusts of wind, and as I say, very unusual indeed, in the extremes of this part of the world.
The very latest on Storm Goretti, with a red danger to life warning in force. We'll bring you the latest and take your calls.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, Storm Goretti has made landfall in the UK, bringing extreme rain, wind, snow and ice along with it. The red wind weather warning covering Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly has now ended, but winds of 110 miles per hour have been recorded, with more than 100,000 properties without power across the southwest of England. Birmingham Airport suspended flights because of heavy snow there. LBC's Midlands correspondent George Ike has more.
The airport says that
because of heavy snow, runway operations have been suspended. They're asking passengers that are due to travel to contact their airline to check the status of their flight. And they said that this is all because the safety of colleagues and customers is their number one priority.
But also a do not travel warning from West Midlands Rail has been extended into this morning. Passengers have been told that services are going to be suspended until at least this afternoon. The government's going to look again at plans to hike business rates for pubs that were announced in the budget. It's understood the U-turn will be announced within days after an outcry from the hospitality sector. Michelin star winning chef Tom Kerridge owns a number of pubs and restaurants and told LBC he appreciates that the government is listening and highlighted the business secretary.
It was Peter Carl's conversation with him in the first place where he presented my business rates to me. He showed me what I will be paying, which meant that they were looking at it in Westminster. It meant that they were trying to pay attention and beginning to understand, I think, and possibly try and undo the wrongs that they put in place from that budget.
Russia says any troops sent to Ukraine by the so-called Coalition of the Willing would be legitimate combat targets. It's after the UK and France announced plans to deploy forces there in the event of a ceasefire. A former Premier League referee who had a sexual video of a 15-year-old boy in his school uniform on his laptop has been spared jail. David Coote has previously admitted making an indecent image of a child. He's been handed a suspended sentence. The US Senate has voted 52-47 to advance a resolution that would block military action against Venezuela without congressional authorization. Last weekend, US troops captured the Venezuelan president and brought him to New York to face charges. LBC weather: Storm Goretti will slowly edge away today, but rain and some snow continuing across the east of England. Sunny spells and a scattering of wintry showers elsewhere. Highs of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
It's after midnight. Good morning. You're listening to Henry Reilly in for Ben Kentish here on LBC. Clive Bull is coming up from 1 o'clock, so make sure you stay tuned for Clive. By the way, lots of nice messages coming in for Ben Kentish and also suggestions on baby names. I'm going to read out some of your suggestions in a little while, in about 15 minutes' time. So, and we did sort of speculate. Did Ben Kentish agree to decide his baby's name, his little boy's name, via referendum? I think he sort of loosely did. So get your votes in now, and we can at least propose to Ben what his son should be called, because Ben has not named with Mrs. Kentish his son yet. And I think really because he wants your view. He wants to know what you think. So get your votes in now. We've had some baby McBaby faces. Brilliant. What should Ben Kentish name his son? I think Henry's a lovely name. Or maybe you can name him Clive after Clive Bull. Dave after Dave O'Brien. You could name him Sheila after Sheila Fogarty. Tom Swarbrick. Well, obviously not both. Just Tom, not Tom Swarbrick. Not Vanessa. Or Sheila. But yeah, Nick Ferrari, Nick, Ian, or Dave, as I say, after Dave O'Brien. So interested to know your thoughts on that and who you, what you vote. Who you voting for Ben to name his son? You can get your text in now. 84850 is the number to text, or you can WhatsApp 0345 6060 973, and we'll come to your votes on that a little bit later on. I want to talk this hour about weight loss injections. I am not on it. I would quite like to be on it, if I'm being perfectly honest. I've always struggled with my weight. About 2.5 years ago, I will happily tell you what I weighed. I weighed 18.5 stone, which is a lot. I weighed 119 kilograms and I was fat. And a lot of that was as a result of the pandemic, which you can say, well, you're blaming that. It was just sort of truth of the way I was sort of living my life, and I wasn't exercising, and I have always struggled to keep the weight off. Although since university, I was just piling it on. And so I put on a lot of weight to the point where, as I say, I weighed 119 kilograms. And something sort of spurned in me where I thought, I need to lose weight here, and nothing seems to be working. I'm not going to go into the sort of specifics, but essentially I remember telling a family member I was going to lose weight, and they didn't even react badly. They just said, okay, yeah, all right. And I knew they didn't believe me. And I thought, well, I'm going to show them. And I thought, how sad is it as well that my this person who doesn't think I'm going to lose weight. And they were right to think I probably wasn't going to lose weight because I'd said it so many times before. So I did lose weight. I lost 5 stone and I ran the marathon. Come on, I get a round of applause for that. I ran the marathon and lost a bit of weight. I have put a little bit on since, if I'm being perfectly honest. But I understand why people are on the weight loss injections, because when you struggle with your weight, it's tough. And life is tough, and keeping weight off is tough. And it's tougher for some people. And yes, there's a degree of personal responsibility. I completely agree with that. But also, there is also a sort of point where you've tried everything and it's simply not working and you need a bit of help and you need to be able to be sort of helped along the way to lose that weight. And so for that reason, I am in favour of weight loss injections, right? I think they are a good thing. But the two stories today that I'm very keen to get your thoughts on. Firstly, the boss of, this is hardly surprising. The boss of Greggs has said that popular appetite-suppressing drugs, i.e. weight loss injections, have led to people looking for smaller portions, affecting the country's bottom line. People are looking for protein and fibre and generally healthy options. Roisin Curry, who's the boss of Greggs, said, adding that the bakery has now been introducing products to tap into the market. Greggs has previously said people's dietary changes have led it to move away from its usual fare of hearty and high-fat pasties, cakes and pastries. Curry's comments come as the first reported lackluster profits, and a muted forecast for the coming year, saying there was a broader health trend emerging with people demanding more protein. That's one side of it, but the side I'm really interested to get your thoughts on is, it's on the front page of that was on the front page of yesterday's Daily Mail, but still keen to discuss it. I know a few of my colleagues did. This study that's been done by Oxford University, and they spoke with Tom Swarbrick. You'll hear from that in a moment. But in essence, you need to be on the weight loss jabs, injections for life. This Oxford study appears to show patients coming off the drugs pile the pounds back on within 2 years. Millions of Brits taking weight loss jabs may need to stay on them for life, experts have warned. This was a landmark study that found that most users regain the weight inside 2 years of stopping treatment, much sooner than traditional dieters. The injections, including now household names like Mounjaro, Ozempic, Wegovy, have been hailed as a breakthrough in obesity treatment. But a major Oxford University review suggests the benefits may be short-lived once the treatment ends. In the first analysis of its kind, researchers examined 37 studies involving 9,300 people, found that when they stopped taking the injections, the weight returned rapidly, regardless of how much was lost. On average, users gained around a pound, 450 grams, a month after quitting, which was 5 times faster than those who'd slimmed down through diet and exercise alone. I'd like to know from you this hour, if you have thought, if you're on the weight loss injections, have you thought about a sort of exit ramp? Have you thought about what you're going to do when it finishes, when your dose finishes? Because I'm also acutely aware that depending on what dose you're on, I know Ian Dale was talking earlier on quite openly that he's on a low dose for the weight loss injections, and I think he's lost a stone, he was saying. I'm acutely aware that you will eventually have to come off them because they are expensive in a lot of cases. I mean, these are not cheap. I know you can get them in some cases, I think, on the NHS if you've got certain medical conditions. But if you're going private, then you're spending a lot of money. And it may be money that you think's worth it, and that's great. But have you thought about how you're going to eventually get yourself off these weight loss injections? Is it through lowering your dose and then gradually stopping and hoping that you've sort of learnt from it and that your diet has changed? And that your stomach maybe, is it always a myth that your stomach has shrunk? It might be a sort of slight urban myth, but that you essentially don't need the amount of food that you were eating before. So I'd like to know your experiences with being on the weight loss injections this hour. Why did you do it? If you're not on it, why? Is it a case of, and you have a problem with your weight, is it a case of money? Is it a case of scepticism about the injection? But more broadly as well, when you hear that you might need to be on them for life, are you now starting to think about how you can eventually wean yourself off these weight loss injections? Call me now if you're on them and tell me your experience. 0345 60 60 973 is the number to call. I mentioned this was done by Oxford University. Dimitrios Koutoukidis is a dietitian and senior researcher at the University of Oxford. He carried out this research and spoke with my colleague Tom Swarbrick earlier.
What we did was a systematic review of the literature of clinical trials, and we looked at approximately 35 studies with over 9,000 participants, and we looked at those who took weight loss medication, any weight loss medication, such as Wegovy and Mounjaro, among others, and we looked at the study, how long people took the drug for, and after they stopped, for how long they were followed up, and what happened to their weight. And what we found was that their weight was regained within approximately 1.5 to 2 years. So people on Wegovy and Mounjaro lost approximately 15 kilos on average, and then they regained approximately 10 kilos within the first year after the end of treatment.
Are you surprised by that? And if so, in what way?
So we were surprised by that because our previous research after stopping dietary behavioral program showed that people regain their weight in approximately 4 to 5 years. So this happens to be almost four times faster than after stopping traditional diet programs.
So as quick as it comes off, it goes back on just as quickly?
It seems to be that way, and we don't really understand the reasons behind that. It might be that after the drug suppresses your appetite, and if that when that stops, people might not have developed sufficiently strong skills to keep their weight off. Mm. But the good news in all of this is that people who also are on a behavioral structured program during the time that they are on the drugs lose more weight. They lose approximately another 4.5 kilos. So having the support at the same time that you take the drug helps people lose more weight.
Dimitrios Koutoukidis, the dietitian and senior researcher at Oxford, speaking with Tom Swarbrick earlier on. I mentioned that many of my colleagues have discussed this. Nick Ferrari, who's with you on The Breakfast Show, spoke with Professor Giles Yeo, Professor of Molecular it's difficult being dyslexic on this show, Neuroendocrinology at the University of Cambridge. And he spoke with Giles Yeo this morning.
Any degree of surprise at this news, or did you always see it coming, Professor?
Oh, no, I always saw this coming. I don't know about the rapid weight regain. That needs to be looked at a bit more closely, because relatively few studies with the newer drugs were actually included in the study. But the fact that people regain the weight after coming off the drugs is not a surprise at all, because as with most drugs, when you stop them, the symptoms tend to reappear.
Question. As an expert in the field, if someone you love, someone you know, says, Giles, I'm thinking of going on Mounjaro or Ozempic, what would you say to them?
Well, I can actually tell you the real answer, because my son is on Wegovy at the moment.
Right.
Just for clarity. And he's been on it for a year. So, and look, he had a real serious weight problem, which is why he went on it. He didn't use it for cosmetic reasons. So my answer would be, if you need the drug, which means you're not using it to get a beach bod or trying to fit into a wedding dress, is you need the drug because the weight is causing you health problems, I think the answer is yes, you should be on the drug.
And Sheila Fogarty spoke with Sarah LeBrock, director of the All Out Obesity Campaign Group, who has been using weight loss injections for around 2 years herself and has lost around 6.5 stone. Sheila spoke with Sarah LeBrock.
So, like, my own experience is sometimes I might eat one meal a day because I'm just not hungry. And actually what I need to be quite mindful of, and I'm not brilliant because I'm not, you know, I'm not perfect, no one is trying to think about, am I getting protein? Am I getting nutrients in that one meal that I'm eating? Because what we are seeing across the world is malnourishment coming through, scurvy for the first time. I think Robbie Williams has been on the medication and talked about, he actually got scurvy. Because you're not actually fueling your body correctly, because you're not eating enough. People's hair's falling out.
So you don't need a giant bowl of pasta. You need a plate of fish with vegetables and potatoes.
Absolutely,
for example, yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Or kind of red, you know, a good steak or something like that, that you're getting your protein. Or, you know, Greek yogurt for breakfast rather than cereals. You know, these kind of things.
And it's interesting, when you see headlines that say people may need to be on these drugs for life,
yeah.
You say what? So, calm down. So what? If it's clinically correct, so what?
Yeah, we don't question someone being on insulin for life. So why is it such a big thing? You know, it's kind of like we would be, you know, someone who's got asthma has an inhaler for life. We never question this about other chronic conditions. So why are we questioning it for obesity?
Do you think there should be, you know, it's not quite as easy, is it, to go and get, you know, insulin you don't need online? Or maybe it is. I don't know. I've never tried.
You can't.
You can't. Well, there you go. But it is easy to get these online, whether you need them or not, isn't it? Do you think that's something that needs to change?
Yeah, I think we've created this, you know, way of people thinking, well, if I can buy it online, why can't I get it, you know, scenario. But I think for me, it's like, if you meet the prescribing criteria, which is for some, one of them, a BMI of 30, another one, a BMI of 35, I think it is. And then also some of the comorbidities associated with it. Mm-hmm. And if you meet those criteria, absolutely fine. You know, if you want to access it privately because you can't get it on the NHS because it is so restricted, then I don't see a problem. I think what I am seeing a problem is people accessing it that shouldn't be accessing it. And therefore, you know, taking it when they don't meet the prescribing criteria for it, because like I say, going back to an asthma inhaler, I wouldn't take an inhaler if I didn't have asthma, so why would you then take a medication if you don't have obesity? So yeah, it's kind of just making sure that the right people are getting access to these medications, and we're improving access, because what concerns me is that people that can't afford them are struggling, you know, are still having to,
and there was did I dream it, or was there about 6-8 months ago a slight widening of access on the NHS for it? There was,
wasn't there? There has, and the government is looking at the moment. There's a big Innovate UK funding bid going out for the local authorities and local healthcare providers like the NHS to put in money to then improve access to the medication. So this is all ongoing, and they are trying, but it's just not happening quick enough, really.
Sarah LeBrock speaking with Sheila Fogarty earlier on. After your views now, when you learn from this Oxford study that it could be for life if you have to take your weight loss injections, are you prepared to do that? Are you prepared to take these injections for life? Are you looking at other ways to do it? Has it been a sort of a kickstart, a bit of a head start, and you'll now go your own way? Have you thought of an exit route to get off the injections? 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. Come to your views on that next. And also, Ben Kentish baby name suggestions.
This is LBC.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No. No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Hillary's huge winter sale is on, and now there's even more savings for the window wise, with an extra 10% off everything until the 2nd of February. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, keep the cold out and the cozy in with free thermal lining on our favourite curtains and Roman blinds. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 12, I'm going to quickly go through some of the Ben Kentish suggestions, then I'll come to your calls. Anne says Paul Kentish sounds good. Paul Kentish, okay, Paul Kentish sounds good. Josephine, I'll send you home. You know, Chris Rea, good song that. A late Chris Rea. In Northwood, congratulations to Ben Kentish and his wife on the birth of his son. I think the name Zach Henry Kentish has a nice ring to it. That's my vote. Thank you for your kind words, Josephine. And this from Ange says, again, thank you for the kind words, standing in for Ben. Please, could you read out my suggestions? Noah, Asher, Oliver, Seth, Luke, Matteo, or Lucas Kentish? Best wishes to Ben and his wife. Diane says James and Tom are quite nice names. Tom, oh, after Swarbrick and James. Which LBC presenter is called James? Oh, Hanson. James Hanson. And Brian Alicante. Oh, let's just do that. Hold on. No friends. This from Susan says Susan. I mean, it's a boy. So I don't know if we'd be... I mean, fine. You know, do what you want. Liam says, in fact, that's about weight loss, sorry. Lawrence says, good morning. Some names for Ben's newborn. James, Christopher, Lawrence, Mark. Says Michael. Stephen says, call it Dave. Yep, after Dave O'Brien. Very good suggestion. My LBC colleague. He's with you here later from 10 a.m. Emma says, your baby, after taking inspiration from your party. Very good. Rupert Archibald Kentish says Tony in Southend. Oh, my goodness, there's so many suggestions. Dale says, who is Dave O'Brien? We obviously don't listen to LBC enough. Kentish, says someone. JK, says Neil. I'm like JK from Jamiroquai, but Jeremy Kentish. That's a good idea. Clark says this one, as in Clark Kentish. It sounds a bit like Superman, maybe. Theo Kentish says Chris. Oh, my goodness, there's so many. I'm going to send these to Ben. Just last couple, Tracy and Harlow says Nathaniel Perry Austin. And this from Samantha says, Ben, I think, should call his son Joshua. And David in Doncaster says Riley Kentish. There are so many suggestions. I didn't realise how many suggestions there'd be for Ben Kentish's baby. We'll try and send him a list. Can we send him a list? We're working on it. Thank you for all your suggestions. Ben will get these. Let's go to your calls on weight loss injections. Kenneth Kenny Kentish, says Peter. Call on weight loss injections. Paul is a new caller in Caterham. Hello, Paul.
Good evening.
Are you going to put forward Paul as a baby name for Ben Kentish's son or not?
Far too common. Especially with Jones as my surname. I mean, I didn't have a chance.
Yeah, well, how many Paul Jones are there in the world?
There's hundreds, isn't there? Manfred Mann one, and yeah, there's like, that's Scottish dance, apparently. Yeah.
What did you want to tell me about? Are you on the weight loss injections?
Yeah. I mean, I've lost 6 stone myself. I mean, I've just gone the scales recently in 14. I was 20 and a half stone when I started, just over a year ago.
Okay,
and,
amazing.
First of all, I want to put the point across that guy who was moaning from Greg's. I was thinking the other day, the gym instructors must be suffering as well.
Yes.
Because, obviously, they were the only answer, apart from the hard work at Swimming World, etc. You know, they were the only... They must be twiddling their thumbs now, because, I mean, I haven't been due to health conditions, etc. But I don't have to. I just stick a needle in me every week and let it do the work.
Do you... Because the worry is, and I remember reading Tim Spector wrote a piece in the Sunday Times about this, is it... The two things are, you still got to exercise alongside taking the jab, is the advice. That's the advice. And the other thing is, you've got to make sure what you're eating is nutrient dense. I remember I was talking to a mate of mine, he says, I barely eat anything. All I'll have is a bowl of cereal, and then I'll have, like, you know, a bit of bacon and sausage. And you think, okay, fine, but you're not having any veg there.
No, it's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, that bit I haven't thought of. I mean, I myself, and that's why I was quite surprised, and I still don't worry about the coming off it, because I never ate much. At 20 and a half stone, I was at the gym 3 times a week, walking the dog, and I'd have one meal a day, just like your friend, bowl of cereal and some toast, and that'd be me. And I thought, well, it's obviously not suppressing my appetite, or it might be just a bit, but it's doing something else for you, inside.
What dose are you on?
As I say, I have a chat with the doctor every few weeks or month, and I got the golden ticket, to be honest, because I was on the verge of diabetes, and I said to him, look, you know, two birds, one stone, how about this? And he put me on it, luckily, so thank God for the NHS in some bits, and that was it, the Mounjaro. And as I say, I feel really guilty when people haven't seen for a while, they say, you've lost a lot of weight, well done. It's not really well done. I feel guilty, like I'm sneaking. You know, like all I do is do the needle thing. Whereas all these poor ladies put the hard work in, weighing and measuring their food and going to the Swimming World every week. As I say, it's easy.
Yeah, well, do you worry about coming off it?
Well, as I said to you, it's the fact of, you know, I don't think my appetite will zoom up.
Yeah, no, sure. But have you thought about when that's going to happen? Do you have a sort of rough date in mind?
Yeah, and as you said about dose, I am having to increase every couple of months when my appetite does pick up just a little bit. But, I do. I mean, how long forever? There's rumours about cancer and all sorts of things with this drug, and I'm like, well, at least I'll die slim.
That's one way to look at it. Thank you, Paul. A new caller in Caterham. Nice to hear your views. Lots of messages coming in. Oh, there's mostly about Ben Kentish's baby name, Kent Kentish, or Town Kentish, as in Kentish Town. That's good. And Emma says, Dave's show is the best on LBC, Dave O'Brien. I'm always on his show as a reporter. It's lovely to get on. And David says, Grok says, the most common name of callers calling into LBC is David or Dave. So I think David it has to be. Maria's in Greenford on the subject of weight loss injections. Hello, Maria.
Hi.
What would you like to say? I'm good, thank you. What would you like to say?
I was on Wegovy, And yes. It didn't work very well. So then I changed to Manjaro and it worked really well. And I was on it for about a year because my daughter was getting married and I wanted to look a lot slimmer. Mm. So I kind of did it for cosmetic reasons, but I've got a private prescription. Now, the problem is I've come off it and my weight's just zoomed up. So that's not good. I used to do Slimming World before.
How much have you put back on, can I ask? It all back on, or?
Yeah, plus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right.
Because obviously the appetite's come back, and it literally comes back in a nanosecond once you come off. I didn't really exit properly. I didn't, like, go on a reduced dose. And maybe I should have done, but I didn't because it was going up in price. So now I'm bigger than what I was when I started Slimmer's World about 4 or 5 years ago. So back to square one.
And what are you going to do to address that? Are you going to go back on it or?
No, I'm not because I don't, now I'm thinking about it, I don't think it's sustainable. Obviously, I can't get it on the NHS. I'm not prepared to spend all that money. I'd rather spend the money than getting a private trainer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see? So so what I'm doing now is I'm back on a very strict diet. I am going to the gym. I've always gone to the gym. But as you get older, I'm a woman in my plus 50s. You get menopausal and right. Your hormones don't let you lose the weight as fast. But I'm going back to Slimmer's World and I'm going back into the gym. I did still go to the gym, but now even more religiously.
Do you know how much you spent?
Too much.
But have you worked it out or not?
No, I haven't. I don't even want to. But what are you thinking? It's a lot of money.
What, hundreds or...?
I would say well over 1,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's a lot of money,
and I'm
isn't
just
it?
Thinking, yeah, a lot of money. And once I've come off it, because I was fine, I didn't need to lose any more weight once I'd got to my goal. I can't stay on it forever. That wouldn't make any sense. So now in my head, it's not actually sustainable. So I'm just going to have to go back to proper healthy eating. And rigorous exercise until the summer. As they say, summer bodies are made in winter. So
I've been telling
really
myself
hard.
That for 20 years. And yeah. I don't know if that works. Thank you very much for being so honest, Maria. Best of luck with it. I know it's just that's such a nightmare, isn't it? You've done all that and then you're back at square one.
Oh, no. Never mind.
All right. Well, look after yourself, Maria. Let us know how it goes. Thank you. Mint says Henry's continued to refer to James as Dave for the last few minutes. Lots of messages coming in on that. We're going to stay with your calls on weight loss injections. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Can also bring you some breaking news, some very troubling breaking news from Portland. Two people are in hospital following a shooting involving federal agents, Portland police have said. In a statement, we understand the heightened emotion and tensions many are feeling in the wake of the shooting in Minneapolis, but I'm asking the community to remain calm as we work to learn more. So says the police chief, Bobby Day. So we'll bring you the latest on that in a moment. First, though, let's get the news headlines at 12:30, which are read by Daryl Jackson.
Storm Goretti has made landfall in the UK, bringing extreme rain, wind, snow and ice along with it. Winds of 110 miles per hour have been recorded, with more than 100,000 properties without power across the southwest of England. Well, as Henry's been saying, with that breaking news, US federal agents have shot two people in Portland, in Oregon, in the United States. They've been taken to hospital where their condition is unknown. Police are urging the local community to remain calm after heightened tensions following a separate shooting a day earlier in Minneapolis. And Arsenal missed a chance to move 8 points clear at the top of the Premier League. They were held to a goalless draw by defending champions Liverpool. LBC weather: Storm Goretti will slowly edge away today, but rain and some snow continuing across the east of England, sunny spells and a scattering of wintry showers elsewhere, highs of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. I probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go to take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Craig's never shown an interest in beekeeping before. But that's the sound of him buying 2,000 worker bees rather than doing his self-assessment. Craig, you live in a sixth-floor flat. The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Craig. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:32 is the time. You're listening to Henry Riley here on LBC. Carrying on your calls with regards to weight loss injections, Sam's in Langley. Hello, Sam.
Hi there. How's it going, Henry?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
So, I've got an interesting story. So, my wife's actually on the jab, right? And she did put on a lot of weight pre, and she has lost a lot of weight since. However, the thing that I think people are missing is that, number one, you're not just losing fat, you're losing muscle. Your body's essentially eating itself. And I think the biggest problem, which is why a lot of the people bounce back, just like your last caller, is that your metabolism slows right down. So
why is that?
You've lost the weight, why is that? Because your body wants to survive. So if you essentially feed yourself less, your body says, actually, look, I'm not getting a lot of food. Let's slow down how I'm consuming it and burning it.
Yeah.
And then essentially, you know, that it's not ready for when you then come off the jab and start eating normally. Whereas on the flip side, I've been dieting down quite slowly with a personal trainer, and I've lost, you know, pretty much the same amount of weight. Maybe it took me a little bit longer, but I'm very certain that it's not essentially going to bounce back, and, you know, I've still got muscle in my body, etc. So it's just a concerning thing. I think it's a short-term fix, and it's not really addressing the problem of, you know, people's bad eating habits. And, you know, really the long-term impacts of, you know, having to do these yo-yo diets, essentially.
I mean, for some people, it's great. And I think it's a good sort of kickstart for people to really get themselves sorted. And if you are very overweight, it's a good sort of stepping stone. And then you sort of feel like you're at square, not quite square one, but do you know what I mean? You're a lot better than you were. And then you can go from that position. But you're right. I mean, the issue is if you rely on it, and there's too many people I know who are on it who don't exercise, and you think, well, exactly, you've got to help yourself.
Exactly, and I think that's another thing that really bugs me about my wife. She doesn't do any exercise. You know,
she's not listening.
Really, I know she doesn't listen. She's in bed now, but so essentially, she doesn't do any exercise. She doesn't do any exercise, and then also, you know, the meals she's eating are not really nutrient rich.
Yeah,
you know, yes, she's eating less, but you know, it's not necessarily helping her long term. And I just think, yes, it sorted out a problem in the short term, and yes, it might help people who are very obese, but realistically, if you want to keep it off, you need to kind of build up more sustainable measures.
Yeah, and I mean, like you sort of referenced there, I know Marks and Spencer's, not to give them a free plug, but they've launched now new dinners that are nutrient dense because people are eating less but need sort of better food in it. And it might be sort of publicity stunt, but nonetheless it's worked. And then you've got restaurants that are serving smaller portions because people just aren't eating the bigger stuff.
Yeah, no, and that's right. But then that's when someone's conscious of what they're eating. I think if you make those decisions, you wouldn't need the jab because you'll be making those decisions every day. I think the problem is, you know, when you've got that, you know, and for my wife, I'm being honest, and probably some of your callers might be able to relate, I can see she's not in control of her portioning. You know, this is when she wasn't on the jab, and she would nibble and nibble and keep on going, and you know, I'd kind of wouldn't say too much, but it's almost like I get the fact that they need some sort of intervention, but I definitely think it doesn't solve the issue, right? It covers up the symptoms, but it doesn't solve the underlying issue with, you know. And then I'm worried she's still on it. I'm worried when she comes off, is she going to bounce back? Definitely, probably. And how much more is it the case, right? Because I've heard even your last caller said she's heavier than she was before she took it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's...
Well, that's true. I mean, the part of the issue... Thank you, Sam. Part of the issue is as well is I think some people are genuinely addicted to food. And I think... And you might say, oh, you would say that, wouldn't you? I think I was addicted to food, definitely. So I would describe myself as being addicted to that. And what's more is, I don't know if you're like this, I'm a secret eater. So I think I have that personality, and I'm trying everything I can to lose weight. I run 40 kilometres a week, not that, you know, which I think is quite, is all right. But, you know, you often get people like me who are secret eaters, who have that sort of personality, who will eat food and hope that sort of no one sees. Thank you. Kerry's in Seven Oaks. Hi, Kerry.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thank you. What did you want to say?
So I've been on Wegovy I'm on my fifth week now, and I am fortunate enough to get it through the NHS. If you would have looked at me, you wouldn't have said that I was tremendously overweight. However, I did, with my BMI, fall into the obese category. I was pre-diabetic.
Yeah.
I had fatty liver,
mm-hmm.
Chronic kidney disease, because I'm in my 50s, and these are the things that start going wrong when you're at this age. Some of your callers are correct in what they're saying, but because I got it through the NHS, I've been put on a program, and it took me 18 weeks before they issued me with the injections.
Yes.
I'm on an app. I put in what I'm eating. It's educational, and it's all about mindset and changing your eating habits. This is a 2-year program. I have a dietitian. I have a prescriber. They interact with me with real people. And the injections are there because they solve a challenge. They solve a problem. But you have to go hand in hand. I exercise now. I never exercised.
What do you do? Do your 10,000 steps or whatever, or however many you do.
I do actually live quite a sedentary life, and I'm a little bit of a night owl. That's why I'm on the phone now.
We rely on people like you, Kerry. We like a night owl.
I'm just coming home from work. But the thing is, I've bought myself
some
mini weights.
You finish late. My goodness.
Oh, this is early for me.
Can I ask what you do or not? Are you a spy?
Yeah, no, you can. I work in a casino. So
what a cool job that is.
Yeah,
you see some characters, don't you?
I do. I would never comment on them. I've just been hosting a ladies' club in poker, and it's just been heaps and heaps of fun.
With
very little money involved. It's great.
What time does the casino close? Not that I'm...
We don't.
I was open all the time. Right, so it's not even closed for like an hour?
No, 24/7. Wow. The only day we close is Christmas Day, because that's legalities.
Right, okay, fair enough. Wow, sorry, I don't know how we got into that. But you, so it's worked for you.
It is working for me. I've lost just under a stone in those 5 weeks. I want to do it slowly. I don't want to do it quickly, because I want to get into a habit. I am eating less. I am eating better and cleaner. I have been educated, and I'm educating myself to make sure that I have the nutrients, that I have the right amount of protein, the right amount of fiber,
yeah,
a good combination of foods. And there's a lot of noise out there about it. And I think if you can cut through that noise, you can, A, understand that it has a place in our society. They've been around for 20 years,
mm-hmm,
to help with, you know, medical situations, predominantly diabetics. And they are reversing medical conditions and making people healthier. And I, for one...
Diabetes, you mean?
Yeah, with diabetes. Yeah, absolutely.
Go on.
Well, I'm pretty convinced that my numbers have already come down. I had people tonight say to me, and they hadn't seen me only in 4 weeks, and they're like, you look radiant, and you look great, and you seem better in yourself.
And it can be a real confidence boost for people. I think it really is. Hey, Kerry, thank you so much for calling. And what an interesting job working in the casino. More calls in a moment. 0345-6060-973. Just going to press pause on that conversation, though, to bring you some breaking news. As we mentioned just before the news there, ABC News has posted local and federal sources telling ABC News that federal agents shot two people in Portland in Oregon on Thursday afternoon, of course, earlier on today, US time. The FBI is responding. The sources say the agents opened fire. Let's get the very latest now. The hardest working man in the business is Simon Marks, LBC's US correspondent, and joins us with the latest. It's an emerging story, Simon, but what more do we know?
It is an emerging story, Henry, but we know that Portland police, at about 2 hours ago, roughly 2.5 hours ago, responded to an emergency call and found a man and a woman, both of whom had been shot, reportedly by the Border Patrol this time around, not ICE. There are two different agencies that are fielding masked agents on the streets of the country to round up migrants. There's ICE, which, of course, was responsible for the fatal shooting in Minneapolis 24 hours ago. But there's also the Border Patrol. And this appears to have been the shooting of two people by Border Patrol agents. Portland police have been at pains to say they were not involved in the incident. The man and the woman were both conveyed to hospital where they are undergoing treatment. According to the president of Portland City Council, it is not believed that their lives are in danger. The mayor said after the shooting was confirmed that Portland is now grappling with another deeply troubling incident. We cannot sit by while constitutional protections erode and bloodshed mounts. Portland, he said, is not a training ground for militarized agents, and the full force threatened by the Trump administration has deadly consequences. So Mayor Keith Wilson in Portland now joining Mayor Jacob Fry in Minneapolis and demanding that ICE and the Border Patrol end all operations in both cities, Portland and Minneapolis, respectively. There are reports that the man was found by police injured by gunfire in his vehicle. I'm not clear whether the woman that was escorted to hospital was also in that vehicle. But there is no question that this puts a fresh focus on the violence and the terror that is without question being meted out on the streets of cities in various parts of the United States by both ICE and the Border Patrol. And it is curious that these two individuals in Portland were found wounded by Portland police. But it doesn't appear to have been the Border Patrol that raised the alarm, but rather the wounded man who called police. Nor, does it seem, were Border Patrol agents still on the scene of the shooting when police arrived. So all sorts of questions that still require answers. You know, we know that ICE agents prior to yesterday's fatal shooting of Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis had been involved in 9 separate shooting incidents, none of them resulting in fatalities, unlike the incident on Wednesday in Minneapolis. But now 2 more people shot reportedly by the Border Patrol agents in Portland, and this is only going to add fresh fuel to what is already an extremely tense and brittle week here in the United States as people react to what is, you know, without question, there's no other way of describing it, thuggish behavior by the masked agents of President Donald Trump's administration.
Thank you, Simon. Clearly a very fast-moving emerging situation to piece together all of those facts. Simon Marks is LBC's US correspondent. We will, of course, bring you any further updates on that if we hear them this morning on LBC. You're listening to LBC. My name is Henry Reilly, and the time is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Clive Ball.
Another U-turn is on the cards for Keir Starmer, but is that necessarily a bad thing? And what road safety reforms should the government introduce?
Clive Ball at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Hear that? It's your big McDonald's hunger calling. Because the Big Arch is back. And this time, it's here to stay. With juicy beef, cheddar cheese and that Big Arch sauce. Hungry? You are now. Order delivery on the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability, price and participation may vary.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Start the new year off right with Halfords' biggest ever January sale.
We've got up to 50% off motoring and cycling essentials. So forget new year, new you. Make it new year, new bike. New year, new car tech. New year, new tools even. New year, you get the idea. Pop into your local Halfords store or shop online today for new year, new savings. Offers subject to availability. Full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
You have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
Automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it. With Intuit QuickBooks.
This is LBC with Henry Riley.
12:47, Sean's in Belfast. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Henry.
Hello. Are you on the weight loss injections?
I'm not on it, but I know a lot. I know a lot of family members are on it, friends are on it. Everybody's hockey now seems to be on it. I have struggled with my weight for years, like up and down, you're very yo-yo dieting, but I've always got this certain weight, and then I've realised that I'm getting heavier, and I've done something about it. You know, and I've stopped eating like bread, which is a killer for me. And
I did
cut
that.
Down and I started moving more.
I cut out bread for about 6 months.
Yeah, I think bread can be there's so many carbs in it, and then it's obviously so much sugar, and some people don't realise how much sugar's in bread. But
it makes you feel English, though.
Enough to fry where I am, but...
Oh, that's true, actually. White pudding?
Black pudding and stuff, yeah.
I like white pudding. When I was in Belfast, I had white pudding with my breakfast.
Did you have potato bread?
I did have a... Yeah, absolutely. You bet. I had the works, mate. I think I had an Irish coffee as well, which I know is very touristy and no one actually really drinks that first thing.
I was just going to say, after talking about drink driving the other day, it's not a good thing to have you're driving.
Well, that's true, yeah. Don't have it before you're driving. Sorry, you were saying, Sean?
Yes, it just feels like I'm not on it, but before I could have took it if it had been available a few years ago when I was sleepy heavy, but it just feels now that everybody you talk to who's on it, and it feels like everybody's really overcomplicating the issue now. To me, it's like... But you hear people saying, I can use it as a stepping stone and I'll use it for a while until I get slimmer and then I'll do the gym. It's just, I've done it myself, and I'm not saying everybody's the same, but because everybody has their struggles, but it just feels like it's a crutch for everybody. That you don't have to try now, you don't have to try and lose weight. It's just stick this needle in you and take this injection.
Yes.
And it'll do all the work.
But I do think it's a good helping hand for people, Sean. All I would say is there are some people who do sort of completely give up, and if this can lose a certain degree of weight and then give them the personal, quite frankly, if you put it all back on, it's tough. But if you are one of these people who it sort of spurns you on and you see you're more confident in how you look and you're happy, I think it can be a good thing and can encourage people to keep it off.
But they always say it, I understand what you're saying. I understand. I've had that argument with many people, that discussion. But if you're not learning, it depends on if you're going to learn to eat a healthy diet. But most people I see are on this injection and they're still eating chocolate, they're still eating crisps, they're still eating all the rubbish, you know. So obviously if they're going to stop it, because the prices are obviously some crazy money when you think of it, if you're going to be on this injection long term. Some people are spending a few hundred pounds a month on this stuff. So,
it's also hugely expensive, isn't it? To get your hands on some of these injections. Sean, thank you. Hope all is well in Belfast. Appreciate it. Andrew, coming to you in a moment. 0345 60 60 973. First, though, I mentioned earlier on we're going to keep you updated with the storm. Let's speak now with John Ketley, the weather forecaster, legendary broadcaster. John joins me now. Talk us through Storm Goretti, John. What else do we need to look out for?
Well, the impacts have been huge already, Henry, I must say, because we've seen those gusts up to 85, 95 miles an hour across parts of the southwest of England. The Isles of Scilly, I think, reported 99. Mm. And we've got them up to 80-odd miles an hour going now through the Channel Islands and, again, hitting the south coast in the next few hours. The centre of that low pressure actually is moving from west to east, roughly along the south coast, and then it'll be moving off into Belgium during tomorrow morning. So it's all wrapped around that low pressure. As you say, it's called Goretti, and it's been named by the French authorities because the storms are actually worse further south into northern France. But we've certainly got a good taste of it. I could actually have my own programme tonight, if you wouldn't mind, because there's so much going on. Different impacts in different parts of the country. Of course, we mustn't forget that across most of Scotland, it's been very, very cold for the past 2 weeks. And again, the snow fields there in the North Highlands have got temperatures down at minus 12. But elsewhere, coming further south, it's in England and Wales, really, where Gretty's having an impact. And we've got a band of heavy rain, which has turned to snow in different parts over the past few hours. And through the night, there will be more snow across the Midlands, up into northern England. And very gradually, the arcing band of wet weather with some snow is going to keep on moving from west to east. So as the night goes on, other places where you haven't seen any snow so far, but there's certainly a lot of the surface water about, there will be some local flooding. Well, some of that rain is actually going to turn back to snow in the hours to come through the night. So we've got some pretty nasty conditions to wake up to on Friday morning. If it isn't the heavy rain, it's the strong winds, and in some places there will be a covering of slushy snow as well. And if anything, that snow is going to continue on and off throughout the night and through tomorrow over eastern parts of England up into eastern Scotland. So things improving in the west very slowly, but on the eastern side it will be a wintry flavour for much of the day on Friday.
And how long are we expecting these impacts to be felt for, John?
Well, the cold weather and Storm Gretty is just for the next 24 hours or so, but things will still be pretty cold on Saturday. There'll be more sunshine around and just a few wintry showers down the east coast of England for a while, but otherwise a much better day on Saturday. Icy, though, first thing, because of all this bad weather that's around at the moment, it is going to be a very icy start in many areas on Saturday morning. So that's a word of warning if you're thinking of planning a trip early in the day, because it will be quite treacherous where roads and pavements are untreated. But there will be sunshine during the day. And then on Sunday, we are seeing a change. It'll again be pretty cold first thing in the morning, especially over central and eastern parts. But there's a band of milder weather and some rain moving into the west as the day goes on. And that rain will eventually push these higher temperatures eastwards. So next week looks more normal, should we say? What should we call it, normal for the UK? Yeah. I think we're going to see temperatures typically 6 to 9 degrees for most of the week. And there'll be bands of rain mixed in with some brighter days.
And next week, is the cold air going to linger? Or do we know what we're looking at for the start of next week at all, John?
Yeah, milder weather is around for Monday and Tuesday. It won't be quite as mild as the week goes on, but even so, temperatures will be about where you'd expect them to be in the middle of January. What we've had so far this year has been unusually cold. We don't see many of these cold snaps these days, it would appear. But when you do get them, of course, they cause all sorts of problems. It really is strange, isn't it, in this country. We just can't cope with anything out of the ordinary. I think we've got to get used to it. It isn't something that's going to be around forever, and we're going to see them every year necessarily, and there will be some interludes of bad weather, but on the whole, things are not like they used to be, but when they do come, we're always in a mess.
Are you surprised that in your career as a weatherman, we still are seemingly, we go to pot, basically, whenever there's a bout of bad weather?
Well, it's either the wrong kind of leaf or the wrong type of snow, or we just haven't been out with the gritters or something like that. I don't know. It is very, very strange, isn't it? But, of course, it isn't like continental Europe where they know it's going to be very cold, Scandinavia in particular. They know it's going to be a cold winter. They always change their tyres, don't they? And they can put chains on their tyres. We wouldn't bother doing that in this country because these cold interludes are very short-lived and generally they wouldn't even occur every year. So we wouldn't go to the expense of changing our tyres for the winter, but we do get into a mess. It's a shame, really, but I think when we do get a bit of snow, the big kid in all of us enjoys it for a few days.
Yeah, me and you both. The dulcet tones there of John Ketley, the legendary weather forecaster and broadcaster. Back to weight loss injections. Andrew's in... People don't like the word jabs, I've noticed, based on the sort of messages coming in, so I'll try and avoid it where I can. Andrew's in Bayswater. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Henry. How are you?
Yes, good, thank you. Are you on it?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
No. But I'm on something which I think is much better, which is a low-carb diet.
Well, you must have the willpower of a saint.
You see, the thing is, no, because I love the food I eat.
What's a classic Bayswater fry-up for you, then, or a classic Bayswater meal?
Okay. Breakfast, eggs, bacon, tomatoes.
Okay. Yes. Tick.
And a classic, you know, supper will be salmon. And the thing is, you can have lots of protein. You can have lots of vegetables. You just cut out refined carbs. And what got me onto this was I was diagnosed about 10 years ago, type 2 diabetes.
Right.
And a doctor said to me, listen, we can put you on drugs or whatever. We never make a diagnosis just on one reading. come back in 3 months, you can make some lifestyle choices, or we can put you on drugs. And I made the lifestyle choice, go on a low-carb diet, and it's the best decision I ever made. I've lost weight, I feel better, I love the food I eat.
Do you drink, could I ask?
I do.
Yeah, okay, so that's interesting, because I always think that's... It would have to be one or the other for me. I don't think I could do both.
No, I do. Because, I mean, I drink wine. With dinner every evening, I drink wine.
Okay.
And wine, in my understanding, is low carb.
Well, my granddad lived to the age of 95. He had a couple of glasses of red wine every night, so I think it's good enough for him. The Queen Mother drank gin, didn't she? Thank you, Andrew, in Bayswater. Appreciate it. Let's quickly squeeze in Cameron in Wembley as well. Hello, Cameron.
Hi, Henry. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. We haven't got an awfully long time, but what would you like to say?
I was just saying about the Mounjaro side effects, but if you don't go along with the program, it does give you... the side effects are quite bad. It makes you sick, and you lose your appetite anyway with a Mounjaro, but the main effect is that you have to drink lots of water and do lots of walking with it. That's how it helps you reduce your weight.
How long were you on it for?
For 4 months. I lost 14 kilos.
Right. What's that in old money? 14 kilos. How many stone? How many stone? Is that, what, 2-3 stone?
4 months. 2 stones.
Right, okay, my goodness. And was it worth it then, if you felt like that afterwards?
It was worth it, but it was making me sick. I felt nostalgic at times, and then I spoke to my GP in regards to it.
Yeah.
And because I've had an open heart surgery, and I've had COVID, and I've had a stroke, and I said it just wasn't suiting me, so I just had to come off it. And plus, I'm type 2 diabetic. So... Yeah. So.
When did you stop doing it, sorry? You were on it for 4 months, you said.
Yeah, I stopped it 3 weeks ago.
Oh, wow, okay. And you're confident you're going to keep it off?
I'm happy. I've just stuck to the program, according to my nutritionist. It has helped me quite a lot. Mm. I'm not going to say that it's totally bad. It is good. It helps you, but you have to stick with the program.
Yeah, and you've got to look out for all of those side effects as well, as you say. Thank you, Cameron, in Wembley. No more calls. I was going to say more. I could do an extra hour if you want, Clive. You can go for it too. That's it from me. Thank you for all of your calls. Thank you for all of your baby name suggestions. We didn't get many Clives, I'm afraid.
There weren't many
Clive suggestions, nor Henry. That's it from me. I'm in for Ben Kentish again next week. You can listen back to the show on the Global Player app or the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all of the latest news and opinion. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause, rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. That's the LBC app. Download it for free from your app store now. At 4 on LBC, it's Ian Payne, but first, it's time for Clive Ball.
Henry, thank you. Coming up after the news at 1, there are strong indications that Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves will be performing another U-turn, this time over business rates for pubs. They're being criticised for doing so, but isn't it sometimes good for politicians to change their minds? Also, the government is reviewing road safety measures and planning a change in the drink drive limit and compulsory eye tests for over 70s. What driving measures do you think should be on their list of changes? And as OpenAI introduces a health-based service, do you think the internet can help with health issues and queries? Should we be wary of Dr. Google? That and more coming up after the news at 1, next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, more than 100,000 properties across Cornwall, Devon and the South West are without power this morning as Storm Goretti hits the UK. Winds of more than 100 miles an hour have been recorded. LBC's southwest correspondent Andy Ballantyne has the latest.
The first named storm of 2026 has been described as a multi-hazard event, predicted to be more powerful than the Great Storm of 1987. One minute it's raining, hammering sideways, the next it's hail, rattling the windows, and then suddenly nothing. The main worry out there at the moment is flood water, especially in the dark, where you don't know how deep it is or how strong the current might be. The advice is not to drive through it.
Alerts for heavy snow are in place for the Midlands and parts of Wales. Birmingham Airport's closed its runway and West Midlands Rail's suspending services until this afternoon. In other news, police in the US say federal agents have shot two people in Portland in Oregon who have been taken to hospital. They're urging the city to remain calm after heightened tensions following a separate shooting a day earlier in Minneapolis. Here's LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks.
There are reports that the man was found by police injured by gunfire in his vehicle. I'm not clear whether the woman that was escorted to hospital was also in that vehicle. But there is no question that this puts a fresh focus on the violence and the terror that is without question being meted out on the streets of cities in various parts of the United States by both ICE and the Border Patrol.
One person's died and 27 others are missing after a landfill collapse in the Philippines. Reports suggest they are trapped in an avalanche of garbage and debris that spilled into the village of Binalu. Police and firefighters rescued eight people, but one woman died on the way to hospital. And it finished goalless between Premier League leaders Arsenal and defending champions Liverpool in their clash in North London earlier.